It can only be Millennial. And now here is your host, Millennial Woes.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to Millennial X. This is the final stream for tonight. Every year people ask me whether Blackpilled is going to appear, and every year I rush to secure him for one night, and I did that, and here he is, the much beloved Devin Stack of Blackpilled. Devin, welcome back to Millennial.
Oh, thanks for having me on. Always a pleasure to come on.
All right, thank you for saying that. By the way, I should say that it seems that Odyssey might be really glitchy tonight. I don't know whether it's working or not, but with the previous stream, I think it was down for about 10 minutes. We'll just have to hope that it is okay. So, Devin, I'm bound to ask the question. I'll ask two big questions. Right, first of all, do you have any impressions of 2024 up until the 5th of November, not including that day? What do you think about this year?
It wasn't super eventful other than the campaign stuff, obviously, and Trump getting shot at and all that sort of stuff. It's just a lot of it was very predictable for me. I just thought that that you could tell right away, especially post October 7th, that there was something had changed, that the Trump campaign was not being shit on as much in the mainstream media. You didn't have you started getting a lot of support from people who typically. The people that didn't support Trump, I guess, the first time around, a lot of never Trumpers, you started to get, Elon Musk, not just like kind of supporting, but like wholeheartedly supporting Trump and retweeting all these MAGA accounts on X, after he purchased the platform. And it just, even prior to the assassination attempt, it would just seem pretty obvious. Okay, this is their guy. Biden went from being everyone knows that he's senile and incapable and probably isn't really the president, right? To it's ne- even the mainstream media started to admit that when they decided to use Kamala as the last minute replacement. I mean, it just. The whole thing was a mess. And then after the assassination attempt, it became obvious that like, okay, there's no possible way Trump can lose this. And of course, he didn't. A lot of it for me, I mean, there's other stuff that went on, but like when I think back at 2024, a lot of it was tied up with the election because that's just what happens. I mean, it just seems like there's always an election in America. I feel like you get like maybe like a year and a half break after the inauguration, but the honeymoon phase, I guess they call it, but then it goes back into campaign mode. And it's just really kind of frustrating, I guess, for me because I was trying to tell people that this isn't the even the 2016 Trump wasn't the 2016 Trump. I understand why people were tricked into thinking the 2016 Trump was the 2016 Trump, because I was tricked into that. And you would think that after the first time around of seeing his abysmal failure at delivering on any of the kinds of hopes and dreams that a lot of people on the right had, and then ultimately his failure to remain in office when there were election shenanigans. I've said a bunch of times that the fact that if he truly believed the election was stolen, and I think that he does, and he still left office, then he had no business being there in the first place, because he wasn't qualified to lead people, you know, then I think that's evidence of that. But yeah, it's weird watching all these people fall back in love with, you know, it was like QAnon Lite all 2024. People imagining that they were going to get, you know, all their wildest dreams were going to come true. If we can just get Trump elected again, there's going to be mass deportations and he's going to, you know, the devil's going to explode and you know, there's going to be the 1,000 years of MAGA or something. And it just, it's really kind of embarrassing, honestly. And frustrating because, like I said, now I know what the next 4 years of my life are going to be like. It's going to be, it's going to be sadly being right a lot and watching people being confused about, like, well, I thought, you know, it's already begun. Like, he hasn't even been sworn in yet and he's already backpedaling on, I mean, at least he waited last time to be sworn in before he was like, I was just kidding about locking up Hillary. You know, I was just kidding. WikiLeaks. What's WikiLeaks? I don't know. Who's this Julian Assange guy? You know, I mean, at least he gave, you know, gave us a couple months to dream about it. I kind of feel like, you know, with Trump in 2016, it was like you buy the lottery ticket. You don't think you're going to win, but until they call those numbers, like, you know, that's really what you're paying for when you buy the lottery ticket. You're not paying to actually win the $100 million or whatever it is. You're paying for like that 8 hours or 24 hours or however long between the time you buy the ticket and they call the numbers where you're like, well, I might win. It could happen. And Trump's not even giving us the decency, not even letting us dream for a few months, you know? And so anyway, that's when I think of 2024, I mean, cause a lot of my 2024 was just, was beekeeping and researching, streams. You know, like I spent a lot of time on my streams. It's, you know, I do right now I'm doing one stream a week, but I'm typically doing two streams a week and they're pretty in depth. They're like, you know, three hours long, sometimes longer. And, it's a lot of research and a lot of preparation that goes into that. So it's a full-time job. And then on top of that, you know, beekeeping to some extent can also be a full-time job. And so it was a very busy year for me. And then of course I kind of do the homestead thing and, the place that I bought was not the place that was like, oh, this place is awesome. It was like, I can afford this. and with that came a lot of, structural issues with the place and, you know, so I'm fixing stuff. And so it's been a very busy year for me. And, I'll tell you what, I am looking forward to 2025, not because I don't think, you know, not because of Trump or like that, but I feel like it's going to be easier sailing for me in terms of the beekeeping and the pillbox, you know, not falling apart anymore. I'm trying to get some of these things, like these leaky pipes and leaky ceiling and all this other stuff squared away so that next year I can focus more just on doing the strings. But yeah, that's how 2024 has been for me.
Right. Well, I feel like I'm curious to ask about beekeeping, but I think my audience will want me to ask about politics. So sorry.
No, you can do either one. I don't care. I can always do what I always do. Yeah, my audience probably gets a little tired of it. I make metaphors all the time with beekeeping. I'll tell you what, you learn a lot about politics when you're, it's not just beekeeping. I think if you do any kind of, working with animals at all, because you start to see how, if you were in control of, the most powerful country the world has ever seen, how you might view people, you're basically administrating, 300 million plus people, and you're trying to make, you know, in a sense, you're farming them. You know, I think that the way that they look at us is we're like livestock. And even if they were, you know, benevolent in some way, I think they would on some level still view it that way, you know, where they would focus on, you know, maximizing the economic output. And unfortunately, I just think that because with beekeeping, there's different ways you can do it. There are methods of beekeeping where you can try to maximize the honey production and at the expense of everything else. And in doing so, you will end up with dysgenic bees that are dependent on chemical treatments and micromanagement, and it's really kind of a pain in the ass in the long run, and even really in the short term. But when you see these different strategies, and you could say, like I said, this could apply to if you had cows, like if you were raising cows for milk or for meat, or if you had chickens or any kind of animal. If that's like a serious part, it's not like, oh, I've got like 12 chickens in the backyard and like, you know, I get fresh eggs and that's cool. Although even to that, on that level, I think that's useful for people to understand some of this. If you're serious about trying to make your livestock produce something for you, you start to understand, why the ruling class might do certain things because, you're not, you know, as a beekeeper, the decisions I make for my bees, very infrequently is it, is this going to make the bees feel nicer? You know, like are they going to have a better quality of life? You know, now I try to do that. Obviously, I don't want sick bees and I want to keep them healthy enough to produce honey and to keep reproducing and this sort of a thing. But that's not the top priority. And if you look at the bigger an operation gets, like, so someone like me, I can spend like an extra amount of time having beehives that are better insulated or, because I don't have thousands of hives, I can spend more time on a hive that maybe that's failing to try to get it to succeed because I'm not having to manage 1,000 hives. But when you get to these big commercial beekeeping operations, you can watch, they post videos on YouTube of these guys because they'll do like how-to videos on how they manage. And it's really kind of, it's almost like you see that the PETA videos of the factory farms, right? Only it's bees, you know, it's, they don't give a fuck. If a hive starts failing even a little bit, they kill the queen immediately and maybe combine it with another hive. And it's just, they don't want to spend any kind of extra time. They don't have to. They want to just do whatever's quickest, easiest, and ultimately going to produce the most amount of honey. And so when you watch the way they manage, it starts to click that that's kind of how the ruling class is operating. They don't really care at all, I don't think, about the quality of life of the people in their countries so much as they want to make sure you're healthy enough to keep working and buying stuff. And all that sort of a thing. But if they can make even more money for, you know, having you sick for a while, you know, that's good too. But it's all about what maximizes profit, what maximizes the economic output has nothing to do with quality of life whatsoever. And so you start to see these things and it really helps you understand, I think, the mindset of these bureaucrats and, even the politicians, of course, like anyone that's involved in administrating the company or the country, because they are running it like a company. And which is why, you know, that's what you're seeing now with Trump coming in, talking about the immigrants they're going to start bringing in. That has nothing to do with making life better for Americans. That has literally nothing. I mean, if anything, you can make several arguments about how it's going to make it worse, but it's going to make it better for people like Elon. And people that are going to increase economic output, it'll increase economic output. It'll make the GDP go up. And so that's what they're going to do because that's ultimately all that matters. There's no focus whatsoever on how can we raise the standard of living of the average American. That doesn't even figure into the equation any more than a commercial beekeeper who's managing, you know, 5,000 hives gives a fuck about how comfortable the bees are in their bee yard. And unless of course it impacts honey production, then all of a sudden, you know, they'll care to the extent that it does that.
Well, that's a very depressing description, but it's something that has been said by a lot of people that our societies seem to be under the control of sociopaths who see everything in economic terms. At best, I mean, there might well be a racial animus against white people, and I'm sure there is, but even among the white people in government, there seems to be this mentality where it's really just about money and has been for quite a long time. I mean, this is to get it back to Elon and Trump and so on. Let me ask you this. At what point do you think that they changed their mind? Or some faction among the elite decided, fuck it, let's go with Trump. Let's start supporting him. Would you say that happened about a year ago, 2 years ago?
I think it was October 7th. I think that, the left-wing Jews who had their issues with Trump, because they're, people think when they think, oh, Jewish power or whatever, they think it's just like some kind of monolith and there's no, that they're all like insect people or something, like the Borg, and it's like, there's like some turbo Jew at the top that's controlling them all. And it's like, no, that's not how it works. They're just like every other group, really, go to Israel. If you don't believe me, there's left wing party, there's the Likud party and then there's the right wing party, which is the Likud party, which is, Netanyahu's party. And then you've got the left wing party that, which hasn't been in power in a long time. And they have their political, disagreements. And the same is true of the Jews that are in the diaspora. And, but ultimately at the end of the day, especially when Israel is facing what they perceive to be an existential threat, I think a lot of wealthy donor class Jews and that, of course, the Likud party, Netanyahu, people that have a lot of influence worldwide, were like, hey, I think Trump's going to be best for Israel. That's why if you go back and watch Trump's rallies, he mentions Israel almost more than he mentions America. I mean, he literally says on multiple occasions that Israel won't even exist if I don't get elected president. Don't be surprised if Israel ceases to exist. Who's he talking to exactly when he says that? I mean, I get it. There's a lot of Christian Zionists that are like, oh, that's horrifying. But I think he's talking to the left-wing Jews who, again, while they might have their personal issues with Trump, they kind of are like, yeah, he's right. At the end of the day, we need to circle the wagons and protect our home country. Then that's the guy we go with. The Biden administration, it's not like they're like hugely better on this topic, but they were marginally better because they have a lot of these, the types that are now getting doxxed on in Ivy League schools and getting, now they're not going to be able to protest, without being called anti-Semitic or whatever. But the left elite, has a lot more of a pro-Palestinian view of the world because of this, ironically, because of the, colonist, hate that was thrust upon them by Jewish intellectuals for the last 30 years, it's kind of backfired, but like that's kind of what's happened. This anti-white sentiment that's been blossoming in America for the last 30 years, again at the direction of Jewish intellectuals at our best educational institutions. It's churned out a bunch of these people who view the Israeli settlers as colonizers,
and also they've staffed those universities. I mean, elite universities like Harvard and so on have been staffed with non-whites,
right.
Diversity hires, often at Jewish behest, and such that then those people then turn against the Zionist cause.
Right.
I mean, this is what we saw with Claudine Gay. It was amazing. Right.
Well, and then Claudine Gay, that's a whole thing too, is I mean, it's a golem, it's the story of the golem. The reason why that story exists in Jewish folklore is I feel like it's probably a metaphor for something that happens often with their strategies, where they create this monster that gets out of control and then it ends up biting them in the ass. And I think that's kind of what's happened. And it created this environment where because Israelis were viewed as white and Palestinians were viewed as brown, then obviously, regardless of anything else, the brown people are on the right and the, you know, the white people are bad. And so you had BDS, which, that's the boycott Israel thing that was going on for years that they were trying to legislate out of existence. I mean, going back even when we had that hurricane in Texas, I want to say 5 years ago or whenever that was, to get your aid money from FEMA, you had to sign a document saying that you promised not to boycott Israel. I mean, that was in your papers to receive your federal aid money somehow. And they've snuck it into all kinds of things where you have to, in fact, there was
absolutely incredible. I can imagine 500 years from now, people hearing this and just being astonished at what the things that happened because of America's incredible, what would you say? Reliance, dependence, connection to so enthralled.
Subservience is what it is.
Subservience, that's the word. Yeah, to the Zionist cause. It's amazing.
Yeah, as an example, Pete Quinones, I forget. I mean, Keith Woods retweeted a screenshot of it, I think, this morning, where Pete Quinones was asking one of this is a senator right now in the U.S. Senate, an elected official who is supposed to represent America. And he asked him, hey, I'm surprised the senator even replied to it but what he said was, if you had to pick one, either America or Israel, in only one of those countries could survive, which country would you pick? And the senator replied, go back and read Revelations and get back to me, which implies, obviously, he's saying Israel. He would support Israel. And it's like, in fact, I have it here. It says, Pete Quinones says, hypothetical, one country must no longer exist. A, United States, B, Israel, choose. And it was Representative Don Bacon who said, read Revelations and report back. And so this is insane. But this is also par for the course. And this is, by the way, everyone that's going to be in Trump's administration would agree with that. It's Israel first, all the way up and down. And to a degree that's no longer even because of money and blackmail. Like, a lot of people like to say, oh, they've blackmailed. And I'm sure there's a lot of that going on, don't get me wrong. But a lot of it's ideological. A lot of it's coming from these turbo Zionist Christians, that these evangelical types that permeate throughout the right, throughout MAGA. These are the same types that, you know, believed in QAnon and all this other stuff. And so they really honestly believe, I mean, they're end times prophecy believing Christians that think that we're close to the end times. We're close to when Jesus, and by the way, I'm not just saying like normie MAGA voters. I mean, like, people in the administration believe this. They think we're in the end times, that Jesus is going to come back, and all they have to do is build the third temple, which is where Alaska Mosque is right now. And once they build the third temple and they find the red heifer, which they're genetically trying to engineer right now. And there, in fact, there's a guy in fucking Texas who's been trying to breed a red heifer now for like decades. And they keep flying them out to Israel when they get them ready and to get in, so they can inspect, you know, the rabbis out there can inspect it and shit. They're literally trying to bring about the end of the world. Long story short. And that's the kind of people that we're putting into the White House. And so, yeah, okay, Biden sucked.
A red heifer.
Yeah, you don't know about this?
No, I don't.
No, this is not bullshit. Well, I mean, it's bullshit, but like, this is, so in the Bible, I guess, somewhere part of the end times prophecy is there's going to be this red heifer, like this red cow. And that's like one of the, and they have to sacrifice this red cow on this altar, and then, like, I don't know, if you're Christian, Jesus comes back, and if you're Jewish, then the Moshiach shows up and then kills all the Christians. So it's kind of like, you know, match made in hell, because that's the craziest thing too. So the Christians and the Jews, they both think that, like, so the Christians think that when Jesus comes back, he's going to force the Jews to become Christians. And the Jews think that when their Moshiach, their Messiah, comes for the first time, he's going to enslave all the Goyim. And so, like, each Jew will have, like, I forget, they have an actual number. It's like 2,000 slaves or something like that. This is, by the way, this is all, look it up. This is, I sounds crazy. This sounds like Harry Potter nonsense. People in Trump's administration believe this. People, I don't know why people don't know this. Well, I guess because increasingly a lot of people aren't religious. But this is something that a lot of people, including the guy that Trump wants to, you know, the based guy that people were talking about because he has a Jerusalem cross tattoo and a Deuce Vault tattoo. That guy believes this, 100% believes this. Like, he has said that he believes this. This isn't like conspiracy theory, you know, Devin trying to, like, you know, no, this is, well, they'll tell you they believe it. They'll tell you they believe it. And these guys think they're bringing about the end of the world by supporting Israel, because part of the revelations or whatever is that, you know, Jerusalem is going to blossom like a flower in the desert. And then it, you know, the Antichrist show, they're trying to make the Antichrist show up. I mean, that's the crazy fucked up thing, but it's true. The Antichrist shows up, and then, you know, the rest is history. And so that's legit what that's what's fucked up. That's the problem, is we have these people in positions of power. And that's why, if it seems weird that, well, why are they always so willing to put Israel first? Because they think that's what God wants, and you can't override that. You can't reason with that. You can't reason with someone who thinks they're, you know, any more than you could reason with one of these, you know, jihadis that thinks he's going to blow himself up and get 72 virgins. You know what I mean? Like, you can't reason with one of these end times Christian Zionists that think that they're going to make Jesus come back, and that's why they support Israel no matter what, like literally no matter what, you know, like that guy demonstrated, what's his name? The representative Don Bacon. And again, he's just one of many. He's one of many. So, that's pretty black pilling, because, and that's why I think they wanted people like Trump in office. I don't think Trump believes this shit. I don't think he personally does. He might. But Trump, I think, has his own reasons for supporting Jews. His father supported Zionist causes when, you know, I mean, it's generational at this point. I did like a 3-hour stream kind of showing all of the connection. I mean, Trump's been bankrolling Jewish. I think accurately characterize them as Jewish terrorist groups for 40, 50 years. You know, and his mentor is and close associates here stateside in New York were Jewish mafia guys. You know, whether you're talking about Roy Cohn was you know, his mentor. That was the guy who basically torpedoed the McCarthy hearings by trying to get his gay lover out of military service by trying to blackmail the military. That blew up the whole McCarthy hearings, which obviously meant an end to finding all the communist Jews that were infiltrating the government post Roosevelt. And, you know, this guy has been, you know, worked very closely with Jewish organized crime. There's lots of mainstream reporting about this that I go over in that stream. If anyone wants to, it's called Trump and the Jews. It's like 3 hours of, you know, here's all the connections. All of his father's associates and his Trump's associates when it came to building like the casinos in Atlantic City. You're talking basically it was Russian. This is the funny thing, when they were saying Russia, 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 and it sounded crazy to everybody. It's because they couldn't just say what it really was. Jews who were from, you know, their families were from Russia, but it was Jewish Russian mafia that he had so many connections to. And they couldn't just say that, though. They had to make it sound like Putin was, like, you know, operating Trump with some kind of, like, you know, game controller or something like that. When the reality is, I mean, Trump has been working with the Russian Jewish mafia pretty much his entire life. You know, his casino, the what was it, the Taj Mahal, got busted something like 70 times for basically money laundering. Like, they were money laundering for the Russian mafia. Again, Russian Jewish mafia. All these guys are Jews. Remember his lawyer that he fired right after he got elected.
I forgot the name, but I do remember that.
Like Michael Cohen or something like that, or not, yeah, Cohen. Ring the bell. But yeah, that guy owned a Russian mafia hangout. Like, that was like his big property, was this Russian club. It was a club for the Russian mafia in the Bronx, where one of the guys who had his office there was this, like, mass murdering, you know, like the stories you hear about, like, the tatted up Russian mafia guys, you know, like, they've been to Russian prison, they're all fucking hardcore. Yeah, that it was one of these guys ran his office, his whole criminal enterprise out of Michael Cohen's club. And so it's like, the other thing is, a lot of Trump's money, or his father's money, the reason why this relationship, you could say, and I don't know, maybe there's more to it than this, but at the very least, one of the reasons why this relationship existed is when he was buying up, he basically was getting money from the federal government post-World War II, because they were granting all these, they're basically handing out money to developers to build houses to accommodate the baby boom. But not only to accommodate the baby boom, we were also bringing in what? Well, a lot of Jewish immigrants, coming in from Europe. And the part of New York that would basically turn into a very Russian Jew, not just Russian, like Eastern European Jew, neighborhood, like a big part of the town was basically just streets and streets and streets of these houses Fred Trump was building. That's where he got his money, or a lot of his money, is he was getting federal funds, building these neighborhoods, and Eastern European Jews that were coming to America post-World War II moved into these houses, and he was helping them getting financed and all this other stuff. And of course, there was probably a lot of weird shenanigans. He built a synagogue, Fred Trump. He built a synagogue and donated the land for it and paid for a lot of the construction for it. He's been funding, again, after World War II, during when Israel was first becoming a country officially, I guess, by mass murdering Palestinians as they do. Fred Trump was funding a lot of that. You know, like people, I don't know how much about this, you know, but like, people bring up how Jack Ruby, the guy who killed Lee Harvey Oswald before he could talk to investigators, his real name was Jack Rubenstein. And he was also a Eastern European Jew who was part of the mafia. And he was running guns between America and Israel to help the Zionist, again, terrorist groups that were killing. Well, not and in fact, if you go back even further, they were killing British people, you know, the King David Hotel and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So like these are the kinds of connections Trump's family had prior, way, way, way before 2016, you know, and I didn't know any of this stuff. Most people didn't know any of this stuff. I get it. Like, in fact, even if I'd known this stuff, I don't think this is before I really understood the role that Jews played in the West. And so it wouldn't have hit the same, you know? And so, but now there's no excuse. Now it's like, again, none of this stuff is like secret information. Like, I don't have like access to some secret database of Eastern European Jewish history or something that no one else has, you know, this is all stuff you can find. And, people are surprised when he goes Israel first. It's like he's tied to Chabad Lubavitch, which is that it's basically, it's a Russian Jewish, Masons, Freemasons, basically. I mean, it's a secret society, a fraternity of Russian Jews. I mean, so even with that, his daughter married into it. Jared Kushner is part of Chabad Lubavitch, big, you know, obviously very influential member. And his father, who Trump pardoned on his way out of the White House, who he's now going to make an ambassador to France, I think. Even though, like, the reason why he was in jail is Chris Christie. In fact, the reason why Chris Christie got kicked out of the inner circle was because of this. It was payback. Chris Christie, tried and convict Jared Kushner's dad because he was getting sexual blackmail, not just on his brother-in-law, who was talking to the feds or maybe it was just the New Jersey authorities about some kind of scammy stuff that he was doing. But there's also this isn't proven, but there's also a lot of circumstantial evidence that suggests that he was part of a Mossad operation to get the governor of New Jersey blackmailed, because this guy, I'm blanking on his name. This is in the stream too. The governor of New Jersey was in the closet gay. Jared Kushner's dad bankrolls him, gets him elected governor. And then what does he do? Well, weirdly, as we were talking about with Americans, he went to Israel for, you know, well, I don't know why the governor of New Jersey has to go to Israel, but he goes to Israel. And wouldn't you know it, while he's in Israel, he just meets some guy who happens to be ex IDF military intelligence. And they fall in love, I guess, right? So he gets honeypotted by some gay Jew that used to be in military intelligence. He comes back, gives him a job as the person in charge of homeland. He's not even an American citizen. And he gives him the job as the guy who's like the New Jersey person for Homeland Security, right? And which is like, people were even like, is this even legal? Like, he's not American. Like, how can he can't get a clearance, the security clearance to get the information he's going to be privy to. Like, how can we even do this? And it fell apart. It turned out that, you know, he was gay and it was really super embarrassing and he had to, you know, leave office and whatever. But Jared Kushner's dad was all over that. And so it's like, there's implication, at least, that it's possible that Jared Kushner's dad works with Mossad with sexual blackmail. Trump, of course, is tied like very strongly to Epstein. People don't want to believe that. You know, okay. All right. He just is. You don't have to believe it. It's not going to change the fact that he is. And it's just insane. Like, I'll tell you, it drives me insane that all these people thought that Trump was their guy and still do. Like, I'll tell you, I'll just be honest. I've been doing stuff around the house and I put on Millennial and I listened to, I'm not going to name names, but like I listened to like three of your interviews in a row and they were all like, oh yeah, we can finally relax. Trump got elected. Woo, we're winning now. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, how are you, like, is it that level of delusion? And I think it is. I think it is. Well,
you see, this is why I knew that you would put forward this side of things. So I let them put forward that side of things. I knew that it would be adequately counterweighted by your contribution.
Yeah, well, no, I'm not blaming you. I'm just saying, like, it's weird. And it's not just limited to those people. I was talking to someone that was recently at an Ameren like IRL type meeting. And I got the same feedback that like people at the Ameren conference were all very, yeah, we won, you know, it's going to be great. And it's just like, what the fuck? Like, people don't understand. Like, they really do think there's going to be mass deportations, which is insane. I mean, just even like, again, he's not even in office yet today or yesterday. This guy that everyone keeps trying to like float around, like, oh, well, this is the guy that's going to do all the mass deportations, Homon or whatever his name is. The guy who sounds like Archie Bunker, like the guy that like literally sounds like he's mildly retarded. But he talks a big game about mass deportations or used to. Well, now in an interview yesterday, he said that they're not going to be doing mass deportations. Like, here's a quote. He said, "This isn't going to be a neighborhood sweeps and military vehicles going through the city. President Trump and myself have committed this that this is going to be targeted enforcement operation." And he went on to basically say they're going to target the violent criminals that are illegals, and which we're talking, we have tens of millions of illegals in this country, that the only way to get rid of them would be to round them up in a big Eisenhower style operation, which is impractical, which is something I said before the election. I was like, that's never going to happen. And people would say, "Oh no, Holman said he's going to do it. And look, they've got signs that say mass deportation." And it's like, okay, well, he's retarded. They're already backpedaling on it. He's saying they're going to go after the violent criminals, which we're talking about 50,000 people. So we need to get rid of like 40 million. Maybe that's a little high, but it could be as high as that, honestly, at least 20 million. And they're going to get rid of 50,000 people. And Trump said that he's not going to get rid of DACA, that all the DACA recipients are going to be able to stay in the country. He's not going to touch that. So that means all the illegal immigrants that came as children, and we're talking millions and millions and millions of those people, they're going to be able to stay and they're going to become citizens. So this idea that like somehow he was going to stop, you know, like, oh, he's going to like, at least we'll have a chance. Well, okay. Trump's not like, it went from Trump's going to save us to like, okay, well, maybe he's not that bad. And maybe he'll stop the bleeding and triage. And it's like, no, this is the problem with Trump, is a lot of people are going to make excuses. Even as this is happening, he's obviously going to fail. It's going to be, look, it's like last time, right? Last time, you know, he didn't lock her up. That was his big campaign thing. He's going to lock up Hillary literally the second he gets elected, literally the day he's inaugurated, the day they swear him in. He invites her to the brunch or whatever that was, and he has her stand up and everyone give her a round of applause. The Clintons, they're really good people. And then he admonishes the crowd. Like, I think like a couple weeks later, he's at some rally and they're chanting "lock her up." And he's like, "Oh, we don't believe that anymore. That played well during," he said that played well during the election, but we're not going to do it. So he's basically, "Oh, I lied to you." And the crowd's response wasn't like boos and hisses and throwing their fucking water bottles at him. They cheered like it was a funny gag. Like, "Oh, ha, ha, you're right. You're right." And that's the problem, is nothing this motherfucker does is going to radicalize anyone. This guy's just going to sit there and just, you know, shit all over your dreams and hopes and dreams. Anything that you thought you were going to get out of Trump, he's just going to fucking give you a shit sandwich while he hands Israel anything that they want. And people are going to just eat it. They're going to be fucking wiping the shit off their face and smiling about the delicious shit sandwich Trump just gave them because they're winning. And that's the problem with most fucking voters, is they don't understand they're losing if the guy they voted for is in office. The only way, and that's the other thing, people like are saying, well, this will radicalize people. No, it won't. No, it won't, because they think they're winning. They think they're winning. They don't fucking know. They don't know what's going on the border. You know, people I had to get into arguments about, like, that told me that he built the wall that he didn't build. It's insane. Like, I went through all this for 4 years. For 4 years, I had to deal with QAnon retards talking about trusting the plan and how all the stuff that he's obviously not doing was secretly being done behind some curtain. Any day now, any day they were going to like pull the curtain back and let us see, you know, whatever it was they were doing. But he didn't build the wall. He didn't end birthright citizenship. That was the other thing he said he was going to do right before the midterms to make sure to get more people elected. He waved that in front of everyone's face. "Oh, we're going to end birthright citizenship. It won't matter if you sneak across the border and have an anchor baby. It won't matter because we'll just, they're not citizens and we're going to take that away." Didn't even try. Trump, people talk about, well, what about the Second Amendment? Trump's the one that banned fucking bump stocks. He banned fucking bump stocks. In fact, bump stocks got unbanned under Biden, you know, like, not because Biden did it, but that's, I mean, it just goes to show you didn't need to have Trump in office for guns. If anything, he made it worse. His deportation levels under Trump were lower than any year of Obama. Like, Obama was deporting more people. Now there is some funny numbers with that, because Obama, the way he would count some of his deportations, weren't exactly honest, but it wasn't, I'll tell you what, at best it was a wash. So you didn't get anything there. people say, well, he didn't start any new wars. Oh, well, great. You know, like, we left Afghanistan under Biden, you know, like, so at least Biden ended a war, right? Again, it wasn't the most graceful or whatever, but who cares? The people he put on the court, he picked, Judge Kavanaugh, who was literally Bush's lawyer on 9/11 and helped write the Patriot Act. You know, like that's a good thing he's in the Supreme Court now. Oh, great. And then that woman that adopted a bunch of black kids to feel better about herself. Like, I'm sure she's great, you know? And it's like, he acted like he didn't know who Julian Assange was. Julian Assange, when did he get released? Right. Did he get his freedom while Trump was president and pretending he didn't know who he was, or was Biden president? Okay. Yeah, what about with BLM when all that shit was going down, when he was monitoring the situation? I mean, I don't know why people have the memory of a fucking goldfish, and I have to go through and remind them of how much of a shit fucking president he was. But he was fucking awful, and now that he's getting in again, he's the Trojan horse. Inside, you're going to have all, you know, Elon Musk and Vivek and all these people that are going to promote getting high IQ. Mass immigration from countries like India and places like Asia, and that's going to be when you think it's bad when you've got Hondurans coming out and hanging out in front of Home Depot, willing to, you know, retile your bathroom for $5 an hour. That's not white replacement, okay? You know, that's not replacing you. You're not competing with Jorge that's hanging out and saying he's going to fucking mow your lawn for $10, okay? Like, that's not the job that you're competing for, all right? But guess what? Guess what? The people that Elon Musk wants to bring into the country, that's gonna displace white people. And not even just displace people. You're not going to have to just compete with the people they're going to bring in mass. They're also going to displace you politically. They're gonna have political power. Jorge hanging out in front of Home fucking Depot, he's not even aware of what's going on. And legally, he can't vote. Are they still making a vote? I don't know. It doesn't really matter though, because Habib and his friends are going to have $100,000 a year salaries. They're gonna donate to political parties. They're gonna run for office. They're gonna have their own 501c3s. They're going to be a competing group in a way that people from El Salvador could only dream of. I mean, it's insane that people think that that's somehow better. Like when it's infinitely worse to have these fucking people coming in here. I mean, Trump brought the vaccine. People always talk about like how, I mean, a lot of people that love Trump hate the vaccine. Well, guess what? He was he was the king of Operation Warp Speed, right? Yeah, in terms of like the black stuff, yeah, like, oh, all these Haitians everywhere, all this. Okay, well, guess what? Trump did the First Step Act, where they released a bunch of violent black criminals onto or into the public, who many of whom went to reoffend and kill people. He promised the Platinum Plan. He's never even mentioned white people. He mentions Jews all the time and mentions Israel all the time. I've never seen any clip of Trump at a rally even saying anything like, oh, this is what's going to be good for heritage. Not even try to like pretty it up, right, and say heritage Americans or something like that. You know, like I don't know why people have this vision of Trump that's just, it's fiction. It's like 100%. It's not even like 90% fiction. It's 100% fiction. You know, they talk about voter fraud. That's the other thing, too. That's another reason why people aren't going to get radicalized. People were radicalized after 2020 because they thought the election was stolen. They were losing faith in the process. Before the election, there was something like they did a poll, something like 20% or in that neighborhood. It was 20% of the people that were involved or likely voters, right, had faith in the system. 20%. That's fucking low. After the election, after Trump gets elected, 90%. Okay, so, oh, that's great. Good thing Trump got elected and made all these people who would have had zero, that number would have gone from 20 to like 10 or 5. By the way, while their faith in the system goes down, they'd have Kamala in charge. Instead of having 4 years of people making excuses for Indians flooding into the country, you'd have an Indian woman at the helm that everyone would start to fucking hate. And so anyway, it just, people just don't understand human nature, I think, when it comes to this stuff. But yeah, it none of this makes any sense. And speaking of voter fraud, Trump claimed there was voter fraud in 2016. Said, "Oh yeah, what we're going to do is we're going to have an anti-voter fraud commission. I'm going to put Mike Pence in charge of it." He disbanded it in 2018, and they did nothing. They did nothing, which is probably why there was voter fraud in 2020, because he fucking dropped the ball. He did fucking nothing. He got, you know, he Jonathan Pollard, the guy who should have got the death penalty. You know, the guy stealing nuclear secrets and giving them to Israel. Well, thanks to Trump, he's back in Israel. I mean, I did a whole stream on this small town called, Portsville, or not Portsville. Maybe it was, I forget now. But there was a small rural town where a Jewish group decided to put a kosher meat packing facility in their town because it was basically cheap property. And they brought in all these illegal immigrants that demographically ruined the town. And then they the feds actually bust, like, it was under Obama, not under Trump. The feds came in, busted the meat packing plant because, like, almost everyone that worked there was an illegal immigrant that the Jews had brought into the country with false papers. They, by the busload, took those people and deported those people, took them out, and then it economically destroyed the town. So then he started bringing in more foreign labor. He was bringing in people from fucking Haiti. The feds bust him again, the guy who runs this meatpacking plant, this rabbi. The feds bust him again because he's doing money laundering and working with the Jewish mafia. He goes to federal prison. Trump pardoned him on his way out the fucking door. I mean, these are the people that Trump pardoned. And even when he's, you know, people talk about, like, the January 6th people, you know, like, he's not even going to pardon all those guys when he gets into office. They're getting wishy-washy about that. Say, well, maybe it'll be a case by case basis, you know, maybe the nonviolent ones or whatever, you know, like, it's insane. Like, I don't understand how anyone thinks this guy, like, I don't understand the hype. Like, I don't understand how anyone actually thinks that this guy is positive for middle class whites or just whites generally in America or at the West at large. It's like there's this fantasy, like, it's like everyone's under some spell. I don't understand. I really don't understand it. So I think the next 4 years for me is just going to be like, yep, I know. I told you. And I hate that game. I hate that game. And there's some people that love it, but I fucking hate that game. So,
yeah. It'd be fair to say that you're not optimistic about
us. No. He's not even sworn in yet. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, he's not even sworn in, and the thing is, we've seen this before. We already know how he's going to govern. He's done it before, and it's going to be worse now, because at least when he governed the first time around, he didn't have the same people that he's going to have this time around. The people he has now are way worse. Like I said, a lot of these guys now, they're these end times prophecy Zionist motherfuckers that, you know, these Israel first people, or people like Elon, you know, who's, I don't think, is particularly religious, but he knows that Trump will bring in all the Indians that he wants because he's convinced Trump that, you know, that's what he needs. And there's just, you know, and look, Elon's an immigrant himself, you know, so he has no love for the native population. He has no love for the heritage Americans or whatever you want to call them. And because he believes in, like, the race blind, you know, libertarian worldview of, oh, it's all the IQ supremacy, basically. And so we're going to have, you know, we're going to have 4 years of Trump. Possibly after that, we'll have J.D. Vance, a man who, you look at that guy's background. I mean, that guy is basically manufactured. I mean, his whole backstory, he's owned by Peter Thiel. I mean, that guy is a creation of Palantir. I mean, he's basically as deep state as you fucking get. I mean, he fits the profile of the same kind. He's literally the same exact kind of person that the deep state would sheep dip and send off to go topple some government. You know, he's some guy that's got no fucking father, like zero father figure. His mom's a fucking crack whore. They ghost write a book for him when he's some nobody. It's not even that good, but it presents a reason for, like, basically this is back when Trump was running the first time, and the left was oh, they were flabbergasted. They couldn't figure out white America, like, especially, you know, like the Rust Belt, people that would typically vote for Democrats were, why are they supporting Trump? And what's with all this anti-immigration stuff? And so you had that book White Lash and all these other things, you know, come out. This was yet another book that was trying to explain why white people sucked. Like, that's his book, is white people fucking suck, because he's basically explaining why he picked an Indian for a wife, if you want to think about it that way. Because white people suck in the same way that Bill Kristol said after Trump got elected the first time, that we need to get rid of basically the legacy white people in this country are no longer hard workers, and that immigrants work harder, and so white replacement's actually good for the economy. It's the same. That's his book. His book is basically saying that white people in the Rust Belt and in the South and in Appalachia, they're just these white trash nobodies that are failing because they have no hope and they have no direction. Like, it's like, yeah, of course they have no hope and no direction. You moved all the fucking manufacturing to China. I mean, but anyway, so he writes this book that, again, isn't that good, but for some reason, the New York Times has to, like, out of nowhere, right? The New York Times suddenly reviews it, and then he's on NPR, and then he's on MSNBC, and then all of a sudden he's running for Senate, and you know, he's being bankrolled by Peter Thiel, and then all of a sudden, out of left field again, Netflix is going to turn his book into a movie. They're going to, like, this fucking guy out of nowhere, right? This who is this guy? So he's literally a creation. He's manufactured. The Netflix movie, by the way, awful. I did a stream about that, but it's propaganda. It's like, oh, look, he's like you guys, white people. He's like you. And he married an Indian woman, whose family has, connections that may or may not be suspicious. But, you know, he married one of these upper caste, Indians that we're going to be importing, and he's going to be instrumental in that. His kids are Indian. His Thanksgiving photo. I don't know if you saw that floating around. But,
no, I didn't. Is it cringeworthy?
He's the only white guy in the photo. Let me put it that way. It's a photo of a backyard. It's his big Thanksgiving dinner, and it's him and a bunch of Indians wearing saris gathered around a pool. And it's just like, that's okay. I guess that's the future. That's the fucking future. So that's the thing, is you're going to have him I think the plan is, after 4 years of Trump, J.D. Vance is the next guy that'll continue to bring in these Brahmin Indians. And, you know, we'll have a weird kind of Brazil-y kind of country, and they'll get rid of a lot of the regulations. I'm sure Trump will do that. I'm sure Trump will get rid of a lot of regulatory stuff, and a lot of these billionaires will get richer, and I'm sure we'll give Israel whatever the fuck they want. And the white middle class that loves Trump the most will be, if they're even on the priority list, they'll be last. And they don't get it. They don't get it. It's depressing.
Here's this photo.
Let me see if you got it. I mean, yeah, that, yeah. That's his
fucking awful.
Yeah, that's the
every part of that. I mean, how the hell could any white guy feel at home there? Mm-hmm. What the hell is this guy?
Happy Thanksgiving. Doesn't that make you think about the pilgrims and the wrong kind of Indian?
It's just grim.
Yeah. So obviously, what do you suspect J.D. Vance's views are going to be on mass Indian immigration? You know, you know, he named one of his kids Vivek.
Oh, dear.
After Vivek, because they went to school together. Yeah. All these guys know each other. It's going to be Brahmin fucking Indians and tech Jews like Peter Thiel and Zionists that don't see race. And that's going to be for 4 years. Like, what do you think is going to happen? You know what I mean? Like, and for some, I still haven't figured this out. I don't understand the, it seems like these same Indians love Israel just as much as a Zionist. There just doesn't seem to be any religious reasoning.
Well, there's a weird thing with that, isn't there? There's a whole thing on Twitter, especially, I'm sure it's elsewhere as well, of this Israel worship among Jews. And I don't understand where it comes from, really.
Yeah, among Indians. You said Jews, but among Indians. Like the
among Indians.
Yeah, I don't understand it either. I talked to someone once that said that what they think it is Indians come from a culture that embodies the idea that there are different types of people and some people are better than others because they have the caste system, and they kind of view Jews as like the highest caste because they're the chosen people and they're always in positions of power, and you know what I mean? And so they at least I don't know if that's true, but it makes sense on some level that if you've got a people that they come from that background of respecting a caste system where we're born this way and you're born that way, it would make sense why they would respect that. I don't know, but regardless, that they do, whatever the motivation is, whatever the reasoning is, they do love Israel and they do want to support Israel. Part of it could also be, and this is just probably maybe a smaller part, is increasingly you're getting like friction between Hindus and Muslims. And so maybe they see Jews as like a counterweight to Muslims on some level, or I don't know. But whatever the reason is, I mean, they're not going to be, they're like the perfect white replacers. They're people that are going to come in, and Indians have never caused trouble for Jews, or at least historically. Maybe they will. Maybe we fast forward, 200 years, and
they're too subservient and toadying, sycophantic. That's the stereotype, and I've seen it in real life. They're not going to challenge the powerful.
Well, and I think that's what it is too. Is I years ago I did a back when I was still on YouTube, I did a video because I had people always asking, well, why do they want to replace us? It doesn't make sense, because if I am a president of a country, I wouldn't want to swap white people out with Mexicans and stuff. Like, I'd want to be president of a white country that would make nicer things and whatever. And I made a video where I addressed this and said, well, no, what they want is they want people who aren't going to compete with them. The people that are going to it's like Kalergi plan in a way, where they want like this permanent underclass, this mongrelized lower class that is they're not competent enough biologically to ever become competitive or overthrow the government and whatever. And they're just there to like push the buttons and pull the levers and things like that. And so I think really this transition from the way that Trump has described it, we're going to lock down the border if they even do that. And we're only going to bring in all these Indians instead, is that they've decided that, despite what we were thinking, you can't just teach a 65 IQ guy from Honduras how to code, but you can teach a 90 IQ Indian how to code, especially if he's being helped with a ChatGPT or whatever. And so it's just a better fit for what they think the job market's going to be like for the next 10, 20 years. So they're still replacing whites, and they're still getting rid of people who would pose a threat, who do have a history of revolution, who do have, in fact, that's part of like our mythos. When I think back to the Revolutionary War, you and I probably have different views of it, but I look back at it as like my family, like rising up against against impossible odds and throwing off the chains. It doesn't matter how much of that's bullshit. The story, right, is still there. The myth is still there. And that myth is still important to a lot of Americans who can track their their ancestry back to the Revolutionary War. That's always been like a big, you know, part of our story as Americans, that we are, you know, that we like guns and independence, and we're it's our job to overthrow the government if it ever gets too tyrannical, and it's written within our founding documents. Well, I mean, you're going to not really have to worry about that if you're an oppressive ruling class. If you have a bunch of Indians who have no connection to these people, have no connection to that mythos, and on top of that, aren't directly descended from those people. And so there's not even like, you know, you have the, like, as you said, the subservience and the lack of creativity and even you could even say the physical differences. And so it's, I think that's what they want. They would prefer. Okay. Here's a bee metaphor, right? So there are bees that are, angry and mean in the desert. They're Africanized bees. Many, many years ago, a beekeeper decided to get bees from Africa and crossbreed them with European bees, and they made these like super pissed off bees, and they're called killer bees or Africanized bees. And this was back in the 1950s in Brazil, and they have since spread out, and they flourish in desert areas. So where I'm at, all of the feral bees in the area are Africanized bees. They'll kill you. They're dangerous. They're a pain in the ass. But they produce more honey. They produce more honey. But you always have to have a full suit on. And they'll find like you have to. I have to get duct tape if I'm gonna cut one of these feral hives out of, like, if they've built a hive in someone's wall, I have to cut it out. I have to like tape up with duct tape every little nook and cranny on my suit, because if I don't, they'll find a way in and they'll sting you and they'll kill you. And it's no joke. But they make more. They're way more productive, and they are survivors. Like they're not as susceptible to a lot of the things that kill off the commercial stock bees, shall we say. Well, the commercial bees are really gentle. They're really easy to work with, but they don't survive quite as well in this environment. But for the beekeeper, for me personally, it's way better to have these gentler bees, because I don't even have to wear a suit. I don't even have to wear a veil. I mean, depending on, like, you know, sometimes you might get popped once or twice. Well, if you're a little rough with the hive on accident, or, you know, drop a frame or something like that. But generally speaking, if you know, the weather's right and you know what you're doing, you got a smoker with you, yeah, you can go through that hive ripping out honey and stuff, and you probably won't get stung. And so it's in that situation, you could say, well, as a beekeeper, I have two choices here. Do I want the bees that make the best honey, or the most honey, rather, because it's all the same, or are a pain in the ass and could kill me, but they're survivors? Or do I want the bees that make my life easier and they're good enough, right? And I'll be honest, I kind of want like the nicer ones that are make my life easier and are good enough, you know, like they make more. Now, increasingly, I'm going more with the survivor bees, just because they survive. But I kind of feel like that's the kinds of decisions the people at the top are making, where they're like, well, I'd rather have a population full of these compliant people that kind of just go along with whatever the ruling class says. I mean, it's built into them, this caste system, where they just kind of defer to whatever we're going to do anyway. They don't have this history that involves overthrowing tyranny and guns and freedom and all the, you know, all this sort of thing that probably makes a lot of people in Washington nervous. Maybe they don't produce as much, and maybe they're not as good in other ways, but ultimately it makes their life easier to have these fucking people. And so that's what they're going to go for. And it makes the Jews a lot less nervous, because look, I don't think I have to tell you, Jews are very preoccupied about the dangers that white people pose to them all the time. This seems to really, you know, be front and center in their minds a lot. And so when you have a lot of Jews up top who are calling some of these shots, a lot of the donors to Trump's campaign and a lot of people that are in influential positions, not just within the government, but also, you know, at BlackRock and other very influential places in the private sector, you're going to have these kinds of considerations when they make big decisions. And so that's what it is.
Could you imagine a future, like let's say a few years from now, where every advert that you see on billboards and on TV and so on, it's a white woman with an Indian guy?
Oh yeah, yeah. I see that already. I see ads like where they're already pushing Indian the other way around too. And look, JD Vance is a walking ad for that, right? I mean, he's going to be in magazines and in every, you know, any holiday at the White House, or, you know, that if you don't think that's going to definitely affect people, and people don't look, most of MAGA doesn't care. Most of MAGA thinks it's great that he's got this.
Yeah. Because it means that we're less racist than the other side kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and that's the other thing too, is I think a lot of people in our circles, they don't realize that we're not the, we're not the majority now I didn't vote for Trump, but like those who voted for Trump that are in our circles, you're not representative of who voted for Trump. And so when Trump doesn't deliver on the things you thought he was going to give you, most of the people don't give a fuck. Most people don't care about white replacement. Most people, like in America, don't care about white replacement. Most people, and it's easy to get this weird, you know, distorted view of things if you're on Twitter or in any kind of online community, and, you know, the algorithm's kind of feeding you what you like, and, you know, the people that you're friends with online or, you know, people of like minds. But go out in the real world and start talking about Jews and start talking about white replacement. Go to your local bar and do that. Good luck. You know, you're going to get a lot of, if anything, you're going to get anger. The white people will hate you. I mean, that's just the way it is. That's the way it is. It's still a very fringe, view. And just because it gets lip service from time to time from people, like briefly from people like Tucker, as a, kind of a gatekeeping mechanism, when it starts to maybe start like there gets a little too viral for their liking. You know, they might pay you a little lip service to make it sound like, oh no, we understand, you know. And then immediately, what do? They corral the curious white people that they've heard about this white replacement thing. They corral them into these safe little cul-de-sacs where they're allowed to, you know, maybe hate the Muslims and whatnot that are protesting against what's happening in Israel. But that's the extent of it. You know, we'll let you be a little bit racist towards them. And maybe even the Haitians, you know, because, I mean, let's face it. I think even the ruling class doesn't really want the Haitians here. Because what can you use these guys for? I mean, we're talking about an IQ that's really low. And there's just not very many of them. I mean, there's concentrated areas, but it's not like nationwide we're overrun with Haitians or anything like that, you know? So it's just not, it's not like a big issue to them. So they can make fun of Haitians. You know, Trump can say something about, you know, dogs, you know, or eating cats or whatever, which by the way, he only did because Laura Loomer, which, another example of throwing MAGA a bone, you know, having Laura Loomer follow him around and possibly fillet him, if you believe the rumors. You know, that's, yeah, I don't understand the optimism from, like, it just doesn't make any sense to me. Like, none of this is adding up. Like, from no matter how you look at it, you have to basically believe outright fantasy stuff about Trump and his administration, or just be profoundly ignorant of reality to be optimistic about a Trump administration in terms of addressing the things that are most concerning to people who are worried about white replacement in the West. I mean, it that's not going to be addressed. It'll be white replacement will be accelerated under Trump.
So you don't presumably subscribe to the idea that America is heading for an economic renaissance, for example?
No, I think the economy will probably get better. I think because, they will cut regulatory probably with it. They'll probably go at it with a hatchet. They'll make it to where they can bring in all these cheap employees, right? I mean, it'll be great for, like I said, the billionaires. So you'll have middle class and upper middle class people injected into the economy because you'll bring in all these Indians, and they're good little consumers. They're going to want to buy houses, and they're going to want to, so you'll be building new houses. You'll start building all these shitty little fucking cardboard box McMansion neighborhoods, and for the Indians to live in, the tech workers to come in, and someone's got to build those houses. And so you're going to have people doing those jobs. And then the Indians are going to want to have Starbucks to go to right on their way to work. So you're going to have people to work at the Starbucks, and you're going to have more Uber drivers to drive them around. And you're going to, it's going to be, the economy that they're going to, I think succeed at that. And I mean, look, unless something like some kind of black swan event type thing happens, but I think it's going to be good for the economy. If you're a boomer, you're going to be happy because your 401k won't make you nervous, and your retirement plan will keep producing, and you can keep driving around the country in that $80,000 RV and with your wife and her little dog, and just blowing the rest of your children's inheritance, and you'll be fine. You're going to be great. So I mean, look, those guys don't give a fuck. The people who are going to probably care are going to be the younger millennials, maybe even the older millennials to some extent, because you're going to be competing for jobs for these people. But it's mostly going to be the younger ones, because the older millennials are probably more in management and things like that. But you're going to have a lot of these H-1B-1 visa guys come in displacing you, there's not going to be really a place for you, because the lower end jobs are going to be taken up by diversity of the classical sort, I guess, the Mexicans and the black people and the lower end of the demographic gradient, I guess. They're going to be doing the low wage jobs, and then you're going to have the East Indians and the Asians coming in doing like the middle of the road type jobs, upper middle class. And the economy in terms of economic, as far as GDP, it'll probably be good. It'll probably be good. And white people will continue to another thing that Trump did nothing about, the opioid crisis, right? White people will continue to just fucking do drugs and play video games, and just like that the Klaus Schwab's little goblin says, and over and over and over again, any chance he gets, he's like, yeah, we have all these redundant white people in the West. We don't know what to do with them because we're gonna have all this automation and stuff. Well, now we're gonna have automation and we're gonna have East Indians. And his solution is, and he says this in as many words, drugs and video games. And that'll keep you busy. Most of you won't reproduce, so it'll be fine, because you'll just get high all day and play Warcraft or whatever the fuck people play these days. And, you'll just dwindle into obscurity and whatever. I legit think that's their plan, is that you're going to have white people just phased out in America.
And do you think that is going to succeed? Do you think that is what's going to happen?
I don't see any pushback against it. I think that it's hard for me to imagine a scenario where there's any significant pushback to that, at least on a national scale. Certainly, I think it's impossible in the configuration that America's in now. I think it's going to be a slow burn white replacement thing going on, unless, again, there's some kind of radicalization that takes place, and it better fucking happen soon, because we're below replacement on birth rates. And you saw JD Vance's family photo. They're not. And you're going to be Yeah, and people say the solution that, oh, just have more kids. Okay, well, that's not, it's not going to happen. It's not practical, and you know, you shouldn't be in that position anyway. You shouldn't be forced to like try to outbreed the people replacing you. And that's just not how white people operate anyway. They're just on a macro level, when you look at population, that's another thing you learn about beekeeping is bees are predictable, just like any other animal. There's things that you can do to a bee colony that will produce a predictable result. And it doesn't matter which bee colony you do it to. You know, just the simplest example is when you have the little smoker that everyone's familiar with. You see a beekeeper with a little smoker thing blowing smoke. You know, what's that all about? Well, what that's all about is you blow smoke into a hive, and two things happen. One, it blocks their sense of smell. And so when the guard bees would normally start releasing an alarm pheromone that, oh, there's danger, and that riles them all up and gets them looking for the beekeeper to go sting them. It blocks that signal from getting through, but it also makes the bees think that their hive is on fire. And so they start gorging themselves on honey because they think they're going to have to evacuate and they might have to go build a new hive. And so they are basically, you know, loading up on food because they think that, oh, this might be it. It's happening. We got to go. And so that's a predictable behavior. I know that if I blow smoke into a beehive, those things are going to happen. And so part of my management of the bees is doing these sorts of things to create this predictable behavior. And I just think that the people running the show, they're good at predicting human behavior. I think they're good at, you know, you got the Edward Bernays technology has evolved to such a level that most people are just completely hypnotized at this point. Well, like I just finished telling you about, like, these people who think Trump is Jesus at this point. It's like, how are they not hypnotized, right? And look, a lot of that's going to be Palantir. And, you know, even when it was Trump 2016, right, there was Cambridge Analytica. The reason why Trump sounded exactly like you wanted him to sound is they brain raped everybody. Cambridge Analytica went through and brain raped Facebook pages of people who were dissatisfied with Obama and were looking for, you know, a candidate that was going to represent them. And they came up with the talking points that Trump, and you know, ended up using. That's why he sounded like he was, oh, he's talking to me. No, he just brain raped you and everyone, you know, and that was before they had the kinds of AI tools that they have access to now. And that's before Elon Musk, you know, who in addition to owning X, is going to open up Xmail now, right, to compete with Gmail. Don't act like that's not going to be, so he can't just brain rape your mail. And so you're going to have, you know, these tech bros that supported Trump doing the same sorts of things. They're going to be looking at all of your digital interactions and telling you what you want to hear when you want to hear it. And they'll know in real time if it worked. They'll come up with a message and look, just Elon Musk alone, right? If all he had was Xmail and X, he can test out some messaging on you, and he can look at Twitter and the response and measure like weight different accounts with different you know, based on how influential they are and how they respond to whatever message you put out there in the ether. And oh, this one really resonated with people. All these top influential accounts were tweeting about it in a positive way. Yeah, so it's going to become, like I said, they're basically going to become beekeepers. They're working on a higher tech kind of smoke to blow in your face when they come take your honey. You know, like, that's basically what it is. Humans are animals like anything else, and we're just as predictable. Everyone wants to pretend that we're not, but we are. You know, and I'm not not any different. I am too. I get wrapped up in some of this stuff too. And so I just think that it's hard to imagine a scenario where white people peel themselves out of this situation, separate themselves out of this situation without the help of people that that have actual power. And the people who have actual power are the ones doing this to us. People like Elon Musk, as an example, who's white and the richest man alive, and who is one of the people calling for the mass importation of the Indians. So he's doing it, you know, or Trump, you know, who's at the wheel, same thing. He's super rich and white, and you know, he could stop this. The people that could stop it, just they're the ones doing it to us. So you know, it's hard to imagine a scenario where that changes. Maybe.
I've asked you before, because in spite of your moniker, that are you black pilled in the long term? Are you white pilled? And you've said that ultimately you're in the long term, you're white pilled. Would you still say that?
I would say not for America, but I would say, I mean, white people generally, yeah, we're going to survive as a race, I think. I don't know the European situation hardly at all. I mean, just more than maybe the average, or slightly above average, I guess, American. And so I don't know how things are going with the re-immigration and all that stuff. I don't know how successful that's going to be in the long term. But I feel like you guys probably have a better chance, just because of the demographic reality of America already, and the trend lines. And I don't think that white people take America back by any means. Like, in other words, America will be less white every year for the rest of my life. I think that's just the way it is. It's not, there's not going to be like this, you know, we need to be a white country now all of a sudden. Like, who, you know, that's not going to happen. No one that has any kind of means to make that happen wants that to happen. So it's not going to happen. Now, doesn't mean that white people are going to go extinct in America, but it's going to be, it will long term, it's probably going to breed white people that have very high in-group preference, because the ones that don't will breed with Indians or whoever, right? So if you fast forward, let's say 200 years into the future, the only people who will still be white will because for generations, despite the demographic reality of America, their family, or you know, their ancestors didn't breed with non-whites. And so that's going to necessarily mean they were very high in-group preference whites that they are descended from. And so I think you will have a concentration of those traits, because anyone who doesn't have those traits will not be white anymore. You know, they'll be like J.D. Vance's family. So I do think you're going to have that. And I think that as whites become less and less of, I think once whites realize, because I think a lot of the complacency of the boomers is because they went to schools that were like 90% white, you know, or even more, sometimes 100% white. And even a lot of Gen X, you know, very similar situation. And I think that as whites stop perceiving the world as, because in their head, right, because a lot of people, life ends for them at high school. Like, it's sad, but it's true. A lot of people, they stop paying attention to the world. You know, once they, you know, maybe they pay attention to, you know, their job, whatever's happening in their cubicle, whatever's happening at home with their kids, whatever happened on Game of Thrones. You know, it's like, people get very isolated and don't really pay attention once they get out of school. A lot of people don't. And I think that when whites who grow up as minorities in their school system and experience more hostility than they already do, and they'll have a more of an in-group preference as a result of that. They won't just make this assumption that like it's a white country. They won't even think of America. Like, I think a lot of MAGA people, as an example, probably in their head, they still think of America as a white country. Like, they don't realize what's happening. You know, like when they think about America and American presidents, they were all white until Obama. You know, all the founding fathers were white, and you know, the pilgrims were white. And like, I think that, you know, if you, even movies up until like the early 2000s, you know, any movie you watched was pretty much about a bunch of white guys. If it was a teen movie, you know, like American Pie, you know, in the late '90s, right? It was, there was no black guy in that movie. You know, there was even,
I don't know if you've talked about this, but I caught a glimpse of, I'd never seen any of these films, the Spider-Man films with Tobey Maguire.
Right.
And about a year ago, I guess curiosity took me and I started watching clips of it on YouTube. Christ, you know, it's amazing. I think it was 2002. Let me just find that out. But basically, it's extremely, it was 2002. It's extremely white compared to, and probably at the time, that wouldn't even have occurred to me. I wouldn't have thought that. Maybe I would have even thought, oh, there's a black guy there, there's a brown guy there. But by the standards of today, you know, according to what I'm now used to, that film is amazingly white. And then I saw the next one that was 10 years later, and you can see it's a bit different.
Well, and think about all the shows that were on and popular at that time, too. You had Friends. That's all. I mean, I'm going to include Jews in this just because people perceive them as white.
Ordinary people, exactly. Right. Yeah.
So you have Friends. You had Seinfeld. I mean, every sitcom, in fact. I mean, there was always, like, the black sitcom, but it was people thought of it as, like, oh, that's the black sitcom. You know, oh, that's for black people. You know, like there was Cosby Show or there was Martin or, you know, whatever. But that was considered like, you know, that was for them. But
they were also made very cuddly, like Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and the Cosby Show were basically black people being white.
Right, right. And so, but I think that white people in that context, when you're going to a school that's very white, even if it's not like the boomers where it's like 100% or 90% white, it's, you know, it's still majority white. A lot of your teachers are white. You know, you go into the workforce and you work for white people with white people. I mean, I think that your perception is going to, that's no longer the reality, right? So if you're a Zoomer or if you're someone like Generation Alpha or whatever, and you're going into a school now in the same neighborhood that I went to middle school, although I went to a middle school that was very diverse. So maybe a high school. My high school was pretty white. My high school was the whitest high school in town, in fact. But the I bet the demographics are probably more closer to 50-50 now. And so if you were to go to that high school, you're going to have a totally different experience. You watch TV, or if you watch, you know, videos on the internet or whatever it is, it's not going to just be a bunch of white people. Your professors aren't going to be a bunch of white people. So you're going to have a totally different view. You're not going to feel like this comfort of I'm safe because I'm around my people, you know? And I think that that's going to drive whites to be more nepotistic, or that's my hope. My hope is that it'll drive whites to be more nepotistic and more in-group
preferential.
Right. Yeah. More racially centric, you know?
Yeah, this is funny because Richard Spencer, a long time ago now, I think it was 2013, 2014, he did a speech, I think it was at Amren. I can't remember the title, but it was about life as a minority or becoming a minority. And he was saying this, that whites in America are going to become a minority and life is going to be very different then.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I wish I could remember more of what he actually said, but I can't now. But the point is, as you say, that this, in his view, it was inevitable even then. It was like he'd sort of resigned to it even then.
Yeah, I think that it's, I think it's inevitable. And I think that, that again, that doesn't mean that whites are going to go extinct. It just means it will be a different kind of, I'll tell you what, a lot of whites will go extinct. There's going to be a lot of white phenotypes that will go extinct. And you know what? They should, quite frankly, because those will be the ones that aren't going to be ethnocentric. You know, so the whites that aren't ethnocentric, the whites that aren't healthy, the whites that aren't able to compete in this environment where you are pretty much just on your own. You know, you are kind of just thrown to the wolves. You don't have any kind of I think I've even heard you talk about this, where there should be white privilege in white countries. Well, there's not going to be any of that, even to the extent that there ever was. There's not, certainly not going to be any white primacy, you know. And so, and in fact, if anything, it's going to be against you, because there's going to be a lot of non-whites who kind of low key don't like you, because most non-whites kind of low key don't like us, and sometimes really don't like us. And so you're going to be competing in an environment where your skin color is actually going to be a disadvantage. And so the people who are going to be able to come out of that, be able to go through that fucking crucible, you know, come to the other side of that, are going to be better, you know, the better whites. They're going to be the whites that are, you know, they're going to be the alpha whites. They're going to be the kinds of whites that, that we're going to need. And so it's not all bad. It's just, it's a painful process. It's not great. You know, it's not like, it's not something that we should even have to experience, you know, but, unfortunately it's, that's the situation that we're in. And I think there'll probably be parts of the country, you know, that start to self-segregate. There already kind of are a little bit. So you could, I think there's parts of the country, and there, and I think increasingly, it'll be, more talked about. I mean, you can go, there's parts of Brazil where it's like that. You go to Brazil, there's like white parts of Brazil, you know, where it's like not just like a neighborhood, it's like almost like a city. And there's going to be opportunities, I think, for white people to raise families in those areas. America is a big fucking place. I don't think you're going to, you know, be surrounded by non-whites that are hunting you down, you know, like the most dangerous game, or, you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme or whatever, right? I don't think it's going to be anything like that. I think you're going to be, it's just not going to be what it was. It's not going to, we're not going back to the 90s. We're not, nor would you want to. And we're not going to go back to the 50s, or, you know, none of this is going to happen. Those days are over. You know, the time to pull the plane up is over. You know, we've crossed the event horizon. It's done. There's no going back. And so now it's time to start looking at, I'm going to raise a family that's white. I'm going to teach my kids about race realism. I'm going to, teach them about a history of that doesn't involve, it's not centered around World War II. All the things that you had to think of it this way. I think the most successful whites will be those that realize all these things I had to unlearn, all these things that basically kept me from seeing the reality of the world that I live in, and that's been this painful process of having to go through and delete all these files in my brain and reinstall these new programs and write all this new code so that I can still function as a human being, but do so with a more realistic view of everything. You can prevent your child from having to go through that process, and have them just start out with a worldview that actually makes sense. Have them understand that race matters. Have them understand that the harsh realities of the world and our situation, and raise kids that are prepared to do that. One thing I like to bring up with my audience is, don't think about, that's the thing too, is we can undo because I think a lot of the reason why we're fucked as white people is the boomers' parenting style was so damaging. I mean, it was horrific. Where this there was so much, there was almost like a glee when your child would fail, because it was building character somehow. Like, oh, it was almost like they were in competition with us. Rather than wanting, they didn't want to see you like succeed beyond what they had done. I don't understand it, but I kind of got that sense even from my parents. I don't even think that they consciously think that way, but I remember when I started making more money than my dad, I don't think he was happy about it. And so I think that I mean, I don't now, by the way. This is back when I was making some big money back in DC. But I think what the deracination that has taken place, a lot of that was because of this parenting the boomers did, where all this individualism that's popular, it's because of this worldview of the boomers where, they put so much value on individualism and making it on your own that we lost collective power. And I think that whites are going to have to relearn that. And I think that, you should focus when you raise a family, focus on building a dynasty. Excuse me. Focus on being the patriarch of that dynasty. Focus on when your grandchildren talk about their grandpa, it's like they're bragging about him, you know, like, and that might mean you have to make a lot of sacrifices. That means that you can't be like the boomers and say, well, fuck my kids. I hope they get a summer job to buy so they can learn, they can build character and buy their own clothes. They can start learning how the real world works while I go and spend all the money on a fucking, Sea-Doo or Kegerator or whatever the fuck I want to get. And, instead invest in your family the way that the wealthy do. Start working on generational wealth, start working on, that paradigm where you want to have like you want to have your family have like think beyond just like even your children's generation. Think generationally, several generations in the future. You know, whether it's acquiring property that you want to stay in the family for generations, whether it's real estate or maybe precious metals or whatever that property might be. When you acquire things, don't think about like, how is this going to help me retire? Think about how is this going to help my grandchildren? How is this going to help my great grandchildren? And I just don't think white people generally think like that. And I think that if you want to be one of these white people whose genetics make it through this harrowing situation that we have before us, then that's the way we have to start thinking about things.
So it's going to be a kind of selection event in white history.
Absolutely. I think it's already started. I think that people are already getting selected out. And it's harsh, like, because a lot of it began with feminism, right? Because once you start deregulating the sexual marketplace, and that's why you have all these, incels and disaffected men and all these men's rights guys and red pill this and all that. That's why there's such a market for that, because, fuck, my mom was pregnant with my older brother when she was 18. They got married like when she was 18 and my dad was like 23 or something like that. And that wasn't weird for them, you know, like that was the norm for their friends and everything. And that's because it was kind of regulated. You know, they met at a church dance, you know, and that was the purpose of the church dance. The church dance was like, hey, here's a bunch of people who have the exact same value system that you have, and they're all single, and they all want the kind of same, roughly the same, you know, future, and we'll mix you up and play some music, the people that are successfully pair up, they usually will have a family, and away they go. That doesn't really exist anymore, you know? In some religious communities, you still have that. I mean, you still have that, like I would, you know, probably, well, like in the Amish and stuff like that. But even probably also with some of these, Christian, the people that are really, practicing Christians and Mormons, you know, and stuff like that will often marry much younger and have lots of kids or whatever. But a lot of that's kind of just not a reality. It's not the norm for most white people. And partially, I think, because a lot of these Christian religions have also failed to preserve white communities. You know, that's another problem, too. It's like, I think that you kind of, in some ways, need religion as a glue that holds white people together. That's an advantage that Jews have, as an example, right? Like, sure, a lot of Jews are atheists and a lot of Jews are reformed or they're, Hasidic or whatever. But at the end of the day, they are Jewish and they have that ethnic component to it. But there is still the religious component, because even the atheist Jew we'll have like at least a surface level understanding of the Jewish religion, or they'll view it as you know, like a source of wisdom, or oftentimes they'll become religious in their old age. You know, like there was a lot of these Jewish gangsters that made their fortune in America during a Prohibition. Some of these really violent, vile mobsters that were atheist Jews their entire lives, while they ran prostitution rings and gambling rings and casinos, and then they fled to Israel after Israel was created to avoid prosecution from the FBI. A lot of them, you know, as they got old, became religious, and they were welcomed into that religious community. And I think that white people kind of need, we lack that. We don't have some kind of unifying religion that speaks only to white people. We have these universalist religions that that are just as happy to have mass immigration, like the, you know, like the Pope as an example. I mean, Mexicans are Catholic. He doesn't care if Mexicans are flooding across the border. It sounds great to a lot of parishes. The parishes in that town in Ohio where everyone's talking about the Haitians eating cats, they have a mass that's in Haitian now because Haitians are Catholics. You know, they don't fucking care. They don't want to get rid of these people. And so you have a situation where whites don't have that religious component, which I think is important. And so that's going to be a hurdle. That's going to be something to get past. Cause there's, like I said, the Christians aren't, there's no racial component to it really. You could say some of the Orthodox sort of, but you know, it's not the same as thinking that you're God's chosen people, is it? You know?
No, certainly not. So this thing about white people becoming more nepotistic and thinking about the long term, I think among the upper class, that has been far more of a norm. But I think it was completely, if it was present in the working and middle classes, it was completely eradicated from them over the course, certainly in the 20th century, because the whole ethos then was individualistic. So I mean I don't know if it was there in the first place, but definitely it was eradicated if it was there. But among the upper classes, that was far more of a thing. And then I'm thinking about the British context here, but I'm sure it probably also applies in the American context as well, that upper class families were and aristocratic families were stripped of their wealth through various ways, land tax, death duties, that kind of thing, such that, you know, they were dismantled by force, really. And they didn't have enough collectivism, enough organization to combat that, to resist that. So I think you're right that white people definitely need to get better at this, because otherwise they will simply be eaten up. They already, I mean, a huge amount of damage has already been done, but again, it's happened under the auspices of individualism. So it's no surprise that they haven't pulled together. They've constantly been told and been telling each other and themselves not to collectivize. That'd be the worst thing if we ever collectivize, if we ever saw ourselves in those that way. We've got to keep thinking about ourselves as just individuals, where success or failure is down to how hard you work and how much you save, this kind of thing, which sounds good. I mean, it sounds sensible until you realize that it's fucking suicidal.
Right. No, it's good in a 100% white society where everyone else is, you know, essentially shares your value system. And, you know, like that, like that's the problem, is libertarianism, in the same way that, you know, communism would work if we were all fucking insect people, if we were all like robots. And, you know, like libertarianism is the same way. It's like it's not taking into account human, you know, some of the realities about humans that make it impossible. And I think that collectivizing the reason why white people recoil at the thought, and I don't know what or how you would even be able to measure this, but I think a lot of it was probably as a result of the post-World War II propaganda machine, where the idea of whites collectivizing equaled Hitler and Holocaust. And I grew up where that was very front and center. I'll tell you what, in fact, there's probably not a TV show that didn't have at least one episode that pushed that message. And out of any, you know, whether you were watching MacGyver or you were watching Quantum Leap or Friends or even, you know, or whatever, it doesn't matter. You were getting at least one episode where it told you white people getting into a group with other white people equaled genocide. And I think that that was just kind of a meme that really took hold. And in fact, it even became almost like a joke, you know, like that if white people got together in any context, it really didn't matter. There was something dirty about it, you know, like there was something wrong. And in fact, that's why conservatives are so relieved when they have the based black guy on their side, because it's relieving that they feel dirty. If they're in a room, especially if we're going to discuss anything political and we're going to discuss, you know, some kind of political action, and I look around and it's only white people in here, I'm going to feel like it's like a Klan rally. You know, like there's going to be something in their head telling them this is dirty, you know, like, yeah. And so if they have the black guy, you know, Diamond or Silk, or I guess one of them died, so whichever one didn't die, if she's in the corner, then all of a sudden you feel okay. It's like, well, it can't be a Klan rally because she's here, you know? And that's the thing, is I think that it's that is beat into the heads, especially boomers, but I would say Gen X and millennials have that too, to some extent Zoomers. But I guess if you want a white pill on that, I don't know that the World War II narrative has the staying power that it once did. I don't think, you know, especially when you see things like, Hitler speeches translated with AI are going viral on TikTok or whatever, right? I don't think that. People give a fuck as much about the Holocaust. And now look, they're trying to change that. You have over half the states in America with required Holocaust, you know, legislated, required by law, Holocaust education in the public school system. And the remaining states already have legislation in the works, or they might have passed it by now, because this figure I'm thinking of is from this last summer. And so you have, they're trying to, you know, make that change, make it so that every kid, no matter how many years go by, is faced with, you know, the horrors of the Holocaust and how it that's the result of white people collectivizing or whatever. But, I just don't think it's as impactful as it was. And the other thing is even just their tools, right? Their ability to push out a firmware update, that used to be real easy, you know, when back in the days when you had four television networks and you knew that, you know, what everyone was watching, and you could just push out a message and know that like the majority of Americans would see it, and they'd all see it. Not only would they all see it, they'd see it at the same time, which meant that they would go to work the next day and talk about it. And they would, and the whole week is going to go by before the next episode comes out. So they have a whole week to saturate in their mind, and you have every when Ellen came out as a lesbian, and when she was doing her show, and I did a stream about, or partially about that, and when I was researching that event, which was I forget what year, but it was late 90s, Ellen had a sitcom that wasn't very funny. And she, during sweeps, because that's like that's when they do their ratings, and that's when the big, the big shows come out. She came out as a lesbian, and it was like the first time in American history that a television character was going to come out as a homosexual, or at least as a lesbian. And so they do this two-part episode of her coming out as a lesbian. And in between these episodes airing, you had all the rest of the media just talking about it constantly. And so there was like 2 weeks where all Americans heard about was fucking Ellen become, you know, being a lesbian. And it was on Saturday Night Live would do like skits about it, and Nightly News with Peter Jennings, you know, he would be talking about it, and it would, there'd be articles about it in New York Times about like, oh, Ellen's coming out, and it'd be on the front page of Time Magazine, Ellen, you know, coming out as a lesbian. And so like it was like they could very easily push out a firmware update that, hey, we like lesbians, to everybody all at the same time, and get most of the NPCs, which is most people, on board with it. And now I think the media landscape is so out of control, it's not as easy to do that. Now they can still do it to some extent. I think movies will be like that's still like a big way that they can do things, because it's not as easy for, like, even if you made your own movie, because it is way easier for people to produce their own films with the technology, right? It's not easy, however, to get your movie that you made, even if it's awesome, to play in theaters nationwide. Like, you don't have the distribution. You can't go and get United Artists or whoever the theater chains are these days to put your fucking movie in there because you think it's good. Now you can still put it on YouTube or whatever, but it's not the same. It's not as theatrical of an event. It's not, you know, like seeing a movie in a theater, I think, has a special significance as an experience, when it's imprinted in a viewer's mind. Like, you know, I still remember going and seeing, you know, movies when I was a kid in the theater. I remember like the smell of the popcorn and, you know, sitting in the dark with my, you know, little brother or my older brother and my little sister and whatever. I remember the whole experience. Whereas like, I don't remember, like if I saw a movie on DVD or something like that, I remember that I saw it, but I might not even really remember the movie that well. So I think that, you know, maybe they still have that, and they still have Netflix, which is increasingly where everyone's going to be watching their television, and they can release like a whole season at once that has this long story arc to bring you to some conclusion. And, you know, they can still control what people are consuming to some extent and get people to flash their firmware, but it's not the same. They don't have the same power that they used to. What we're doing right here would be impossible not even that long ago. Like, you know, 10 years ago, it would be kind of it would be very difficult to do what we're doing now. And so I think that their ability to brainwash the younger people is going to be more difficult. But also because it's just the time, you know, like boomers cared about World War II because their parents fought in it. Gen X cared about World War II because their grandpa, like someone they knew, like in real life. Once it stops being someone that you have met before, like, it doesn't mean as much.
Oh, yeah, I agree. A lot of people were saying this in last year's Millennial, that it recedes in time and therefore in importance and therefore in influence. Yeah. It's irrelevant to young people today. But something you said earlier about libertarianism blinding people to things, and also the boomers being very individualistic and falling for libertarianism, at least a subset of them, it reminded me of a video that I somehow stumbled on a few weeks ago, maybe a few months ago now, and I'm going to show you some of it, because to me, this guy is an American guy talking about how Sargon of Akkad has forgotten his libertarian principles and thus fallen off, out of the realms of sanity, you know, he is incapable of being reasonable now because he's forgotten about the sacred principles of classical liberalism. Now, this is not about Sargon. I want to make that clear. I don't have any beef with him, except for the historical beefs, but this is, I just want to show this guy and ask you what, I'll show you the first 5 seconds and then I'll stop the video and you just tell me what you think about him. Okay.
Okay.
Here we go.
Greetings, friends of liberty. In this long version of the video...
Any thoughts so far?
That's the way it's the way I picture libertarians when they're in their, you know, in their study. I mean, greetings.
I feel bad almost because he's probably just a harmless autist. But holy shit, he's like presenting himself as an 18th century sort of intellectual.
Yeah.
Fucking preposterous. But then he goes on in all this theory about, you know, as I say, classical liberal. I'll play 30 seconds of it, and we'll just, I just want to, you to get a flavor of this, because it's funny, but I think it's quite, it represents quite a section of, let's say, higher brow thinking white men.
Greetings, friends of liberty. In this long version of the video, I'm going to be using Carl Benjamin, also known as Sargon of Akkad, as a case study for what happens to a person with an excellent mind who abandons the greatest political philosophy mankind has yet devised, classical liberalism. Briefly, its essence is that protecting property rights is, along with the acquisition of knowledge, the foundation for civilizational progress. By consistently protecting property rights, we all deal with our fellow man rationally, not by hitting him over the head to take his stuff like some moped thief on High Street. As well as not giving him a headache, not hitting him over the head promotes the optimal society-wide discovery, preservation, and implementation of productive knowledge. You'd think Carl would get that. Now, in pointing out Carl's error here, I'm not suggesting that he hasn't done great things in the past. He has.
So that's that. So I that's hopefully you're still sentient after that. I don't want people to go and attack that guy, right? Just to be clear. I've got no interest in that. I just think it's interesting because if you look at the video.
Well, if you do attack him, watch out, because he might say, "God, seize him."
Unhand me, collectivist. Well, the video is called The Cost of Abandoning Classical Liberalism. And then I think it's... Yeah. So the point is that you'll see in the comments under that video that several people... Because I did tweet it out at the time when I first discovered it. And so some of my fans went and had a go. And what they're saying is what I thought is that all of this might make sense in itself, but first of all, it doesn't take into account human nature, and second, more importantly, it doesn't take into account where we are here and now. So his principles are, and he's obsessed with logic and rationality and so on. Yeah, fine. If you're in a situation where being fair and logical and rational and objective and impartial will benefit you and your kind. But otherwise, it's just crazy. It's just suicidal, as I said earlier. Well, and I think that this is what libertarianism does to white men. It really fucks them up. Because in the same way that you could say progressivism does a number on white women, I think libertarianism does the same to white men. It switches off their defenses.
It does. It's because there is a rationality to it, and white men are very rational people. But the problem is, it makes an assumption, right, that they're that a lot of things that people take for granted, or that libertarianism itself takes for granted, will be in place. That other institutions will exist, and for example, there'll be something that is some for whatever, you know, for it to work, there has to already exist these magical forces in the libertarian mind, where there's demographics are pretty much the same, right? Because this is the context in which libertarianism would work. Demographics would have to be generally the same. People would generally all have to, if not be the exact same religion, at least, you know, relatively close to the same religion, or have the same value system. You have to have relatively the same level of intellect. for it to work smoothly. Otherwise, it would absolutely create an underclass, because if you're just only always rewarding the top performers, you're going to end up inevitably with a society that's just basically run by really high IQ psychopaths. And you're going to have all these things, that all these, it depends on all these things somehow in a vacuum, without the help of their ideology, pre-existing. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me that you could have this work in a multicultural society. It makes more sense that you'd have a society of people that are, like I said, that are already pretty much relatively the same, that want a way of managing property. Because that's the other thing too, is the emphasis on property. Okay, maybe it's a good way for people who are already relatively the same, for the way that they can agree on how to manage property within a community. But really, beyond that, it sucks. Like, it sucks for preserving, which I think is infinitely more valuable to a people than property, the people itself. Like, there's no emphasis whatsoever on the people itself. They're interchangeable. They're all just cogs in this machine that's geared towards preserving property. And
yeah, and later on in that video, that guy actually says as much, that groups don't really exist. And in fact, I've just remembered, he says that it's all about culture and values. And if an Italian actor plays the role of an Englishman, and he adopts an English accent in order to do it, then while he's playing that role, he is an Englishman.
See, that's the problem.
Incredible.
But that is the mind of libertarians. I mean, I remember I used to work with libertarians, because, like most people in our spheres, I guess, a lot of us came from a libertarian background, because it appeals not just to white men who are rational, but it appeals to white men who are high performers, and because it kind of promises that if you're the high performing kind of white guy, you'll be rewarded. Like, that's, it won't, you won't be rewarding these people that are getting ahead of you because of affirmative action or some government meddling that's somehow getting in the way of your success. Like, that's the selling point, right? Is a lot of white people who are disenfranchised by the DEI of the past, affirmative action or whatever form that it came in. That was the fear that I think libertarianism was soothing. That, like, oh no, here's a way that we can govern our society where you're not going to be punished for being white. You will be rewarded based on your achievement and based on your output. And so that was the hyper focus, because that was the fear that white men had, that they felt like they weren't going to be rewarded based on what they could do. They felt like they were being punished for being white. They felt like they were going to be on the hook for reparations for black people. And libertarianism had kind of like the promise that, oh no, we're going to make sure we address all that by making it all about just, it's everyone's an individual. You're not going to be on the hook for your great, 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 great grandparents living in a world where, like, they themselves didn't own slaves, but some Jew down the street did. And so therefore you owe black people money. Like, we're going to make sure that, everyone's treated as an individual and not as a group, because, like I said, I think that for the first time in American history, white people as a group, it was no longer preferable to be white. Like, even socially, right? The second genetic testing became available, and you can do the 23andMe, so many white people rushed to do that just to hope to God to find that they were 5% black, or, speaking of Sargon, that
it for the opposite reason. I was glad with the results, gotta say.
Right. Well, I never did it, but I had friends that were like, I'm 15% Native American. I'm so, and you're just like, oh, great. So what? But you know what I mean? Like, that's, and I think that even like in the 90s, I remember kids back when it was really cool to be black because rap was cool, and increasingly white people were lame and milquetoast, and people like were very much embarrassed about being white because it was socially uncool. And you know, this is America, so maybe it's different where you're at, but it was socially not cool to be white. Like, and it's still the same way. Look at Zoomers, right? A lot of Zoomers are into black culture,
Rigorism and all that.
Right. So I think that libertarianism was very appealing because it kind of had this promise to high achieving white people who felt like maybe they were getting the short end of the stick. It had this promise of like, oh no, you won't be fucked over by these meddling outside forces. You won't be taxed to death just to pay for Tyrone. Like, in a way, it was kind of low key racist, like a little bit, because if you were to implement it, I mean, let's face it, who would be at the top? It wouldn't be black people, right? You know, so it was basically trying in a non-racial, explicitly racial way to address a lot of the fears that a lot of white people had. And unfortunately, because it wasn't explicit, because it was passive aggressive in the way that it was addressing these issues, it was full of holes. It was full of problems. It was nonsensical. And that's the problem with I think the right generally, not the people in our circles, but like the MAGA people, the typical Trump voter who is afraid of being called a racist, or maybe they aren't racist, maybe they really don't see color or whatever, which I refuse to believe that's even true of even the leftists. The most anti-racist leftist I think still sees race. But that's the problem, is when you're not honest about what the issue is, when you're not explicit about what the issue is, your solution's not going to work. And I just think that white people have been cowards, and that's why they flock to these ideologies that promise to solve the problem in some roundabout non-racist way. And then they're surprised when it doesn't actually address anything, or maybe even makes it worse. But yeah, that's the problem with these libertarians, is they're so focused on materialistic outcomes that they really don't give a shit about a people, about a nation.
Can't, because the ideology really precludes that.
Right.
I mean, it basically tells them that nothing matters but liberty and material comfort and betterment. Anything else gets in the way of that. I mean, you know, collectivism gets in the way of that for sure. So if that is the good and the only good, then you're obviously going to, you can't care about your race or your people or whatever. I wanted to just, what you said just reminded me of that video. So I hope that wasn't too much of a diversion.
No.
There are some people saying in the chat, hold on a second, let me find this. On Twitter, all these podcasters just talk about these problems. To them, it's a career. I'm not saying they're bad people, but the ones listening to them better use their energy to start a family and make their own money. Well, look, I completely agree with you. People absolutely should start families and make their own money and become independent, become self-sufficient. If I could, I would. But because of various choices that I've made, it's not looking likely. Now, that's not something I'm proud of. But I'd love to have a family, but it doesn't look like it's on the horizon, sadly, very sadly. So I don't like it when people say this kind of thing. But at the same time, I can understand the concern. There's a sense that we just talk about these things, but we're somehow detached from them. But we're really not. I mean, we wouldn't be talking about them if we were detached from them.
Well, it's like saying, honestly, like I have nothing but fucking disdain for faggots like that. When people act like, you're somehow, you deserve an award because you had a fucking baby. Like, oh, you knocked some chick up. You know, here's your red badge of gayness. You know, like, give me a fucking break. Like, having kids is somehow like, you, congratulations, you successfully did what like every black guy on welfare has done for like five generations. You know, you popped out a fucking kid. But at the same time, you see a young man, let's say on a battlefield, chasing, you know, going headlong into bullets, get shot in the head and dies. You're gonna go, LOL, he didn't have kids. You know, it's like, no, he's serving a different purpose. He's doing something for for the race. He's doing something for his people, and not everyone has the same exact fucking role. Look, face it. Bottom line is, a lot of people can't do stuff like this if you have a family. Having a family takes up a lot of your time.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, there are people,
and also a lot of people can't talk. You'd be surprised that when people do have a family, their tune starts to change. Yeah, you're right that we are a little bit detached, but you want us to be detached, because now what if I'm afraid to talk about something because I'm afraid that I'll lose super chats or whatever, and I gotta pay for little Billy's braces or something like that. You want a guy who's detached. You want a guy who can look at the world in a detached way and give it to you straight, instead of through some emotional lens that includes making sure his kids eat at night, you know, like. Fuck off. Anyone that says that shit, like they're fucking losers. They're fucking losers. And what would you want me to do? You want me to fucking, never mind. I'm not gonna say.
Okay. But I do understand people want exemplars. They want people that who have walked the walk as well as talked the talk. Well, there are people like that, in our community. And, as I say, I wish I was one of them. I really do. But as I said, it's not looking likely just now.
Well, the other thing is, it's like if you had some guy go talk to, like, let's say, I'm not saying I'm a motivational speaker by any means, but let's say if you had some guy who, like, I ruined my life by smoking crack, and he goes to a school and he's like, I smoke crack, don't smoke crack. And then the kids are like, oh, fuck him. He smoked crack. What does he know about it? And it's like, when I tell you to get married young, even though I didn't get married young, that's why I'm telling you to get married young. Because I know what happens when you don't get married young. It's a lot fucking harder to get married when you're in your 30s. It's way harder it's way harder to have kids and all that stuff when you're older.
Definitely.
I'm not trying to be like when I tell people not to waste their life playing video games. Yeah, I did that. I played video games for hours on end, day after day. I tell them not to smoke pot. I've smoked like tons of pot, like literally probably in the tons. And I'm telling you not to do it. I'm telling you not to fucking do it, because I have done it. I know what it does to your what it does to your life. These people are just, honestly, a lot of them are just fucking, they're mad because they I think it's they hate us because they ain't us. They're jealous. No, a lot of people get mad at people that stream because they're mad. It's like the people that heckle at a comedy show. It's like they're like the funny bitch at the office, and then there's some guy on stage that's getting all the attention, so it pisses them off somehow. So they have to start just being retarded in the fucking audience and being distracted. It's the same thing. It's like they're the kind of dipshit that gets mad when someone else is getting attention. Sorry, buddy. I'm sorry that you're not interesting enough for people to listen to you on the internet. I'm sorry that that's just the way it is. You know, like you can be jealous all you want. The fact that you knocked someone up and you had a couple kids doesn't make you interesting enough to listen to. I'm sorry.
I think the overall point is obviously, and not just knocking women up, but having like good families is obviously.
Yeah, we're case selected.
Yeah, it's obviously something that we should all encourage each other to do. We should all aspire to do. I think we're going to, that's the point. And, you know, petty recriminations aside, obviously that is the, what I would want to remain after these interactions is this awareness. You don't want to be like Gen X. You don't want to be like the millennials. The lessons are there. It's obvious. Try to have a family, try to marry young and have kids before you're 30. Definitely. I mean, that's what our parents did, for God's sake. You know, that's my parents.
Well, I just said my mom was 19, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Mine wasn't as young as that, but they were in their 20s by the time, well, she was actually 31 when I was born. But other than that, you know, everything was within their 20s, and that was the norm then. I mean, it's amazing how fast this has changed.
Yeah.
So that now you have it's quite typical, especially with with the millennials. You've got these women in their early 40s who are realizing they're never going to be mothers, and it's fucking heartbreaking. And you'll probably know women like this. I know.
Well, and I might never be a father. I mean, I hope that not happens, but I might never be a father. You know, that's the way that it is. And that's the future we're trying to get to avoid, man. Like, my plan was, because my parents married so young and had kids, that was the norm for me. I thought by the time I was 25, I'd have a wife and maybe a kid or two. And it just didn't work out that way because of all the same reasons. It's not working out for a lot of you. You know, that's the whole point is, you know, this whole feminism disaster has affected all of us. I'm not immune to it.
Yeah, unfortunately, none of us are. But yeah, so that was just something in the chat that I wanted to address. And as you said, it's like if a thief tells you that thieving is bad, that doesn't mean that he's wrong.
Right.
Thieving is still bad. So that's a, and also, of course, because we know what we're talking about. So that's a thing. But anyway, there was one other question here. Let me see if I can see, I can find it. Why should we think that as we become a disempowered minority in America, that the state won't take measures to wipe us out, like banning intra-racial marriage?
Well, they're not going to do that. that's like sci-fi. Like,
I don't see them doing that. I could see them incentivizing miscegenation somehow.
Well, they already kind of do that with
but I can't see them taking such an obviously authoritarian measure because it's just too obvious. It's just too clumsy.
Yeah, so they're not going to do that.
I don't think they'll do that. Okay, let me see if there are any super chats. Unfortunately, Odyssey seems to have been completely fucked throughout this whole stream, and I can only hope that this problem is fixed by tomorrow night. Here it is. It's there now. It's back. Right. Okay. All right. Okay. I'm going to rush through these super chats because I don't know how long this will stay functional for. Okay. Bluten Biden says the best internet feud of this year was Blackpilled versus the flat-tarded Owen Benjamin. I didn't know that. I think I'd heard that Owen Benjamin was a flat earther, but I hadn't heard about a debate between you. Was that quite an event?
Yeah, it was pretty funny. It was pretty funny. Especially now, given the context of the last couple days with flat earthers everywhere on suicide watch, this guy, who was tired of all these flat earthers on the internet who have always claimed that, you can't go to Antarctica because it's, some kind of, that's where the ice wall is and you're not allowed to go there. And even if you did go there, you wouldn't see a 24-hour sun because we all live on a pancake. And if you live on a pancake where Antarctica is not actually a continent on the southern part of the globe, it's actually an ice wall that encapsulates the entire pizza that we live on. And so the sun that circulates around the fucking pizza, you wouldn't be able to have that and also have a 24-hour sun. And so all these videos, these time-lapse videos of the 24-hour sun in Antarctica, it's all CGI, like just batshit crazy stuff that retards like he Owen Benjamin pushes. That's just one of the many retarded bullshit things he pushes. They've been pushing this shit for years. They've been they do it to distract people from the actual problems facing white men. They're a literal fucking poison. In fact, I did equate them with child molesters because they basically operate on this with the same program. What they do is they find vulnerable people. They find people that are in lower positions than they are. They abuse their position and their their dominant position to trick these people into doing something for their own self-gratification and they're basically like predators. They're basically like child predators to sell them some kind of garbage, like the, you know, whether it's an app or a book or watching their stream talking about flat earth and the dome and the moon is fake, like just fucking kooky ass shit that, speaking of, you know, people that are oh, you're not living the you want to get mad at me because I'm not having kids. Well, guess what? Owen Benjamin's having kids, and he's talking on he's having mixed race kids, and then talking about flat earth. Is that better? Is that better? Would you prefer that? So anyway, this guy got a bunch of flat earthers who are YouTube flat earthers. Gave him a free trip at much expense. Like, we're talking, these trips cost like $35,000. A free trip down to Antarctica, to a base in Antarctica, where they could bring camera equipment, because this is the time of year where you have 24-hour sunlight. You know, in fact, it's more 24. It's endless sunlight this time of year. The sun never goes down. And so he flew them all out there to experience the 24-hour sun for themselves, which is absolute proof that we don't live on some pancake. And what happens? What happens? Well, of course, there's no shame or owning up to the fact that it, you know, it's a religion. Anyway, it doesn't matter. The short version is flat earthers got fucking owned spectacularly on the internet this week, including retards like Owen Benjamin. And it's delicious. It's a little bit delicious.
Okay. All right. Okay, Lamps. Okay, I'm not going to read that name out. The Trump cult will latch on to Barron as their next savior. Happy holidays, MW. Well, happy Christmas. Yeah, the Trump cult will latch on to Barron Trump. What do you think?
I mean, people have been saying that,
but it's sort of ironic just now.
I mean, I've heard people saying that since 2016. But and they are, look, if they can make it work, I don't know what he's like. You know, he's still a kid, so I mean, I guess he's technically an adult now. But you know, we don't know. I've never heard him talk. I've never heard, you know, what he sounds like in front of a crowd, or you know, for all we know, he's like super introverted and autistic and whatever. So if he doesn't have any charisma, they might still try to make it happen. But it's, you know, Trump is, I mean, look at Trump Jr. Isn't he? Or, you know, Donald Jr. isn't charismatic at all. In fact, none of his kids are, you know, none of his other kids at least are. So I don't think it'll work. He's not going to have the same, he'll have the branding and he'll be able to write off that name. I don't think he could be president though, unless he's got at least some charisma.
All right. Okay. Judy says, Merry Christmas, DS and MW. My New Year's resolution is to lose weight. Planning to go vegan and abandon my family. No oil drilling though, so I should be okay. I don't know what this is a reference to.
My last stream, I did a stream about this this weird Colorado this mixed race. Let me just say, someone paid the toll and had to do it. You can watch my last stream. It's called Christmas Coal Edition. And it's about a vegan that paid the toll.
Right. Okay. That does not sound cheery. Okay. Thank you, Judy. Foyd Rage, some shekels for the grocery store. Tesco, lol. Right. Okay. Thank you very much. Green Party, what are Devon's thoughts about dissident right outlets like IM1776, Passage Press, Aporia Podcast, Revolver News, etc., that certainly seem to do excellent work and certainly seem to be on our side, yet they have a disproportionate amount of a certain group involved in them?
I'm only familiar, out of all those, I'm only familiar with Revolver. Look, if they're just like news sites like Revolver is, then that's fine. And if they report the news, you just have to be aware of that. Because there's people that are Jewish, that are relatively fair in their news reporting, that you can, you don't have to just throw what their work in the trash because they're Jewish. But as long as you know that there's that factor, you know, that they're going to be looking at things through that lens in the same way you look at things through the lens of a white guy. But yeah, I'm not aware of what these other things are. So but I'm assuming it's like Revolver did a piece on my PatCon series and promoted that. So, you know, I don't think the author of that was Jewish, because if you start watching the PatCon series, the first thing I do is make fun of the host of the video I'm working on for being Jewish. So it's, okay. I was surprised that they did that. But yeah, as long as you just keep in mind that that's where they're coming from.
Yeah. Okay. And somebody asks, can you kindly and politely get Devin to correctly pronounce a phrase, and I'm going to put it in the private chat for you. Can you read that out?
Alaska Mosque?
Yes, I think it's Al-Aqsa Mosque.
Oh, and I say Oscar? That's
I think so. No.
Al-Aqsa Mosque. I'll ask somebody a mosque. I don't know.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that. That was Bluten Biden. Okay. Lampshade, yes, I'll take that on board. Maybe he'll appear next year. Dharma Initiate, do you think we have anything to look forward to in the coming years? Well, that's a very good question, and it did occur to me earlier, but I didn't get there wasn't an in because you were so in your rant that I didn't get a chance to ask. Is there anything to look forward to in the coming years?
I think I look forward to things all the time. I just not politically, you know, like there's just not, life isn't just politics. Life isn't just, you know, look, what certainly we talk a lot about these issues and about the racial and demographic problems. And, you know, we talk a lot about the, you know, we raise awareness or whatever you want to say about a lot of these problems, but that's not what should consume you. I mean, it sometimes consumes me because that's what I'm researching and working on. But even I, with all my research, I find things to look forward to all the time. You know, whether it's honey harvest with the bees, or whether it's hanging out with friends and family, or what if your goal is to create a homestead somewhere? You know, a lot of people are looking into stuff like that. I mean, that's what I'm doing. There's lots of things you can look forward to. It's just don't expect the political realities to depart from actual reality. Like unfortunately, if you zoom out the graph, you look at the trend lines, we are on the decline in America, at least, and that's the way it is. And unless Elon Musk rips off his mask and he's like, ha ha, I'm secretly Hitler. Like, I don't think, you know, what are you expecting to happen? It's, there's going to be, there's a rough road ahead of us, but like, that doesn't mean you can't still have fun and enjoy life. And I think that'd be my advice. If anything is just don't, I mean, this, you need to be aware of this stuff. And to the extent that you can try to affect things, you should try, and you should try to think about how you could and be creative with it. And we should be discussing this problem as, you know, because that's the thing too, is no one has like the silver bullet solution. I doubt anyone will come up with one, but you know, we need to keep discussing it and trying to figure out, what some of these solutions in the micro can be, even if we can't figure out what the solutions in the macro are, and we can still have a happy life while we do so. You know, I don't see what I think a lot of people get so black-pilled, if you will, about the future of our country not being what they had imagined when they were younger. You know, not being, you know, like, Epcot Center at Disneyland in the 1960s. Being future land, you know, or whatever it was, like, or like Star Trek or flying cars and the Jetsons or whatever. Yeah, you're right. It's not going to be like that, but, it doesn't mean you can't still have a happy family and you can't have friends and you can't enjoy life.
Yeah, that is certainly true. Okay, Love and Division says, thank you, Woz, for letting Stack riff on Trump. Reality check. Okay, thank you. New Jigger, oh, for God's sake. All right, thank you for that username, which I inadvertently read out too hastily. Devon, have you ever had contact with Asha Logos? You seem like two sides of an excellent coin. I would love to hear what you have to say to each other. Asha Logos.
No, I think we've talked briefly a couple times in DMs, but nothing substantial. But yeah, I don't have from what I know of him, which isn't a whole lot. I've never, I don't have like beef with him or anything like that for sure. I would talk to him.
Right. Sorry, I was looking at Rumble there. Right, okay. Okay, thank you for that. And, I mean, I've talked to him a few times, Asha Logos. He's been on Millennial twice. He's a very good guy, very intelligent guy. Okay, and then Enlightened Despot. Devon, saw your video on the Liberty from 6 years ago this morning. Blew my mind. Lesson learned? They never learn. It must make you laugh to see the Trump as Caesar memes. What a joke. He is ferocious doing the deal. Deal done. Friends again. He is no Sula. He never makes a list. Right, okay. That's a rather strange comment, but it's obviously someone who appreciates your work.
Yeah, I think I re-uploaded. I did a video on the USS Liberty 6 years ago and was called crazy, and lots of MAGA people were like, that's ridiculous. But then I guess Candace Owens had one of the survivors on her show, and now suddenly all those same MAGA people, one of whom, by the way, in my personal life, stopped talking to me because I sent them the video. I thought about reaching out now because I happen to know they at least were fans of Candace before she went off the reservation. I don't know if they still are. But yeah, I had people, again, in my personal life, stop talking to me because I made the video about the USS Liberty. It was one of my first, like, not aggressively pointing out the influence and actions of Jews, but kind of. It was kind of. And a lot of people weren't ready for it and didn't believe it. And now I guess they are, because Candace Owens, who's a black woman, said it.
A strong black woman has spoken.
She's given them permission to know about the USS Liberty.
Yeah. It's like the thing about the KKK meeting. Yeah. Well, Candace is here, so we...
Oh, good. I don't feel racist because the black lady said that the Jews did this.
Brilliant. It's true. All right. I know. Thin Red Line says, Trump is a disaster for the right. Great stream. We will win in the end. Well, I thank you for that, and I certainly hope so. Jive Turkey said, Devon, Merry Christmas. Thank you very much. And that for the super chat, and I'm sure Devon appreciates the message. Mr. Cholly says, Merry Christmas, Woz and Devon. Hail from the great state of Tennessee in the Old South. I never miss Millennial, especially your interviews with Devon and Morgoth. Too bad AA couldn't make it this year. Martyr Maid was a nice surprise, though. Thanks for the amazing content. Thank you very much. The only reason Academic Agent isn't appearing this year is that he's not able to work in the evenings. He's talked about this on his own stream, so it's no secret. And it's understandable. It's for family reasons. It's a shame. He did offer to pre-record, but maybe I should have done that, but I was I did that once in 2018 with a few people. I offered that, and it really didn't work well. It was a terrible idea, because what it meant was that I had about eight streams to do before the festival had even started, and they were all done in that week or something like that. And so I was fucking tired even at the start of the festival. It just didn't. And then on top of that, and this is the main reason, the atmosphere is completely different with a live stream. Totally different. Not just because of the live chat, not just because of the super chat, but also just the vibe, the pace. So it just was not the same with those pre-records. And so I've never done it again. So unfortunately, that meant that A couldn't appear this year. Hopefully he'll be able to manage it next year. But yeah, just so that everyone knows that that's the only reason he's not on this year. Okay, and then Land of the Fake said, super chatters control the media. Unfortunately not. I'm going to refresh that just in case any other super chats have been sent in on Odyssey, but I suspect that it's glitching again. So that might be the end of that. I'll keep trying. Right, then there was a Rumble super chat from Henry Ford, and he says, Devon brought me to Millennials several years ago, and I have found so many great pro-white voices every year since. Thanks for your work, brothers, and for putting this on every year. Oh, thank you very much. Thank you to Devon for bringing people over. It's something that I'm glad to do. Thank you for that, Henry. And then again, Land of the Fake said, your offline hours of effort shine through in your lineup as Devon's offline hours of effort shine through in his research. That's nice of you to say. I do appreciate the compliment, but I would also say check out my Substack because that's where I do research and hopefully it shines through in the work. Because, you know, like Devon, I know what it's like to, I do a similar thing in that it's not live streams, but it is certainly the result of, it's the fruit of much work throughout the year. Millennial dominates the final quarter, like the final 3 months of each year for me, but those first 9 months are writing, and it's something that you might enjoy. I don't know. Yeah, some people don't like essays. Some people just like videos. But yes, I'm glad that you're enjoying the lineup. It's always a challenge, you know, choosing the. Obviously, there are regulars, people who appear every year or every 2 years. But then there are also the people who are one-offs and debuts. So yeah, there's a lot that goes into that. So thank you for appreciating that. Okay, Black Pigeon Pilled asks, what about those UFO sightings across America, Devon? UFO sightings?
So in the news right now, they're talking about there's all these drones flying around New Jersey, and there was some, I think it was a senator said that, oh, it's Iran has like a mothership, and it's some, you know, some stupid thing that's not real to get people mad at Iran. And then there's other people thinking they're UFOs, and then the government saying they don't know what it is, which is bullshit. I don't know. Paul Joseph Watson, I think, even put a video out today saying that they, and I don't know, is this like the weird InfoWars Chi-Coms theory or whatever, but what he put forward was that it was likely it was military drones that have the ability to sense radioactive material, because apparently, and I don't know, again, this, I'm just regurgitating what he said. There is some missing warheads out of Ukraine, and there's a fear that there is possibly radioactive material for use in a dirty bomb somewhere on the East Coast. And the reason why the military is acting retarded and not saying what it is they think that telling people that we have radioactive sniffing drones flying around looking for dirty bombs will cause a panic and people will freak out and leave the East Coast. Then it'll just, you know, be a big cluster. And so they're just acting retarded. It could be that. It could also just be they're just testing some technology. Whatever it is, it's not Iran and it's not UFOs. And it's probably not even like the radioactive thing, you know, it's probably just something more mundane than that, but who knows?
Okay. And let's see, there were a few more. Lil Wagon says grocery store. I know that this is a trope, that there's the clip that you use in your streams. What's the background of that? Where does it come from again? You told me one, I've forgotten.
Well, let me just put it this way. I'm trying to think of a way to put it because you have to be. It's a topic one has to be delicate about.
Okay. Don't worry about it. It's all right. Okay. And then Stephen says, I'm a bit more optimistic because there must be levels and factions between us and the regime to relay info and oppose each other. So when I think I've seen incremental improvements in racial awareness, I believe it. Keep in mind, 10 years ago, we didn't have Devon Stack, and you and Woz do much good. Well, thank you very much. Devon, do you want to say anything about that?
No, I think people, look, I'll say this. I think that people realizing Jewish influence has gone well beyond anything I expected, honestly, in this short period of time, which is a good thing. And just even generally speaking, I was still locked into I think if you were to really get into my head, I was always racially conscious. I always lived in diverse situations. And so I'm good at pattern recognition. So I always got it, but I also kind of always doubted my conclusions. I always thought maybe I am racist. You know, I don't know. Like they keep saying I'm just seeing like anomalies or, you know, it's all anecdotal evidence that the big picture is going to paint something else. And yeah, so I always doubt my own, you know, my lying eyes. And, it wasn't until pretty recently, I would say that I got really comfortable with saying, no, I'm racist, you know, whatever. I don't care. And I think that that's a fairly new thing for a lot of people. And so I think that's a great thing, especially given the selection event we were talking about. These are the realities that if whites want to survive, that they need to face headlong. And I think we're making a lot of progress. If I thought we were making zero progress, I would stop doing this, but I think we are making progress.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. I mean, I think I would always want to continue, but I even if we weren't making progress, but I do agree with you that we are. I mean, it's just obvious that if you look at the tenor in comment sections all over YouTube, even and certainly Twitter, obviously Telegram, and now Rumble. I mean, people are very aware in a way that they definitely weren't 5 years ago. I don't think it's just October the 7th. I think it was already happening, but I think that's definitely hurried things along. I mean, a big question is whether that will now calm down because, you know, with the new Trump administration, I do wonder about that because there is, at least from the perspective of white people, I can imagine there seeming to be less urgency. You know, when they're not hearing the woke ranting about white privilege and white fragility and white supremacy, whatever, and how awful everything to do with white people is, when they're not hearing that anymore, they might well be lulled into false complacency. I mean, you can see Elon Musk, he doesn't like this anti-white stuff, but he's not pro-white. He just doesn't like the anti-white stuff.
Well, it's like Tucker. That's the problem. That's why, honestly, Kamala would have been better. If you wanted to wake up more white people, that would, I mean, I think, in fact, I think the first wave of white people, like, you know, high IQ, reasonable white people, upper middle class white people, I think really what awoke made them face some of their observation, what made them face some of their real world observations about race was just Obama being president. You know, like there was, I think, a visceral reaction. I think a lot of white people had to having a black guy is in charge. Like it felt weird for a lot of us. I mean, for me, I was just like, I don't like this. I don't like that there's a black guy who's like in charge of everything. Mm-hmm. You know, and on some level there, like some primal level. And I recognized that in other people that I knew who wouldn't, you know, categorize as racist or bigoted or like that. But there was just something about it that felt wrong. Yeah, I think that if you had Yamal, I'd be like...
Yeah, I think the same thing is true with Rishi Sunak and... And I don't think Kemi Badenoch will ever be the prime minister, but with Rishi Sunak, it's like everyone was being polite, but nobody felt that was actually their prime minister. That's just the guy who's in 10 Downing Street just now, but he's not really the prime minister, because how can he be? Just look at him. I'm talking about normies. I mean, I think everyone felt like, well, politics is just on pause just now because there's a brown guy there.
Right.
You know, I think that was how people reacted to it. They would never say this, of course.
Well, right, and the pushback from Obama from like the right wing was extreme, but they because it's America, they bent over backwards to try to make it not about race, but it was about race. A lot of it was about race. You know, like they would try to act like, well, I don't care what color is. It's not about that. And it's like, it kind of is, though. it's not, but it kind of is a little bit.
With Obama, of course, he was and I've said this before, I'll say it again because it's relevant here. When he started, he was put like, okay, race doesn't matter. There's a black guy in the White House and it doesn't even matter. By the end of it, he was a black activist. He was with Trayvon Martin and all that. And he really kick-started. I mean, well... Okay, there's one way to look at it is that he kick-started the whole woke thing of the 2010s with those comments. I dare say that it would have happened even without them, but I think that definitely was an accelerant, an early accelerant.
Well, I think here's another way of looking at it. In the same way, the white people were kind of like, I don't like this. It was psychologically affecting black people in the opposite way. And I don't want to... be careful my language here, but let's just say they got a bit uppity because, like, oh, we're in the White House. Oh, we're the, you know what I mean? Like the social dynamic kind of changed because, for example, there's a lot of people that will argue that one of the reasons why performance in black neighborhoods took a nosedive, and like you'll have like the Thomas Sowells of the world say, well, or even the Sargons of the world say, well, it's because of fatherless households or the welfare programs or whatever. But I would submit to you that it was much simpler than that. It's just that when you had the civil rights movement kind of really fresh in the rearview mirror, there was still like this underlying fear that the blacks in the South had of the whites that were not friendly to their new civil rights, if you will. And I think that there was, they were kind of kept in check in a way. Right. And, I think socially they kind of existed in this, you know, like you got to figure just a few generations prior, they were property, and now they're not. And so it's an attitude that's slowly changing. And once you had Obama as president, when they were trying to make Obama president, in the same way that you had, the propaganda machine was all over that. You had black presidents and movies, you had black this, black that. Like if it wasn't cool to be black before, it was like super cool to be black just before Barack Obama was president, and during his presidency it was like black, everything's black. Like all the, you know, that's when all the I think a lot of the commercial started to change, where it was, you know, black guy with a white woman, and all the big musicians of that era were all, you know, rappers and black people. I mean, it was very chic to be black during the Obama administration. And I think that that really gave the black community a level of confidence, and maybe even in a weird way, I don't know if hubris is the right word, but you know what I mean? Like that arrogance is a better word. Right. It made them arrogant, and that's why they felt so comfortable maybe doing reacting in the way that they did with George Floyd that you wouldn't see. I mean, you would see something like, at the same time, it's not too out of character, because you did have the Rodney King riots, right, in the 1990s. But that was relatively localized. Like that was pretty much limited to LA. It didn't spread across the world for like an entire year. You know what I mean? It was like, it was in LA for like a few weeks and that was that. Whereas, and it was, look, that the footage of Rodney King was way more, I mean, I think it was totally justified, but you know, from their point of view, it was way more egregious than the footage of George Floyd just, you know, overdosing while he was in custody. So.
Yeah, of course, one of the reasons why there was less reaction to that and more contained is that there wasn't a whole apparatus to encourage it. I mean, BLM, I don't know, that started after Trayvon. And by 2020, when George Floyd died, it was fucking huge. It was incredibly well-funded. It was billions and billions every year that were pumping into that. So it's not surprising that it was able to encourage huge amounts of rioting and violence. I mean, when you talk about it now in retrospect, it's incredible that this happened.
Well, and it was a lot of the same people that were tied to Obama, because you had Obama came from, a former
he was a
member,
community organizer in Chicago,
right? Right, but he was closely associated with former members of the Weather Underground, and what's his name? The guy who ghost wrote his book. It's been so out of my mouth for so long. It's slowly getting out of my head. But anyway, there was this professor. He was a former member of the Weather Underground. Ghost wrote his book and basically was part of the machine behind Obama getting him into the White House. And if you look at BLM, there was that Jewish woman who literally had gone to jail because
was that guy called Bill Ayers.
Bill Ayers. Bill Ayers. Yeah. Yeah. So you had Bill Ayers and one of his associates. Who she had to step down after it became known. But there was a Jewish woman, last name, I think Rosenberg, something wrote like maybe it was Ethel Rosenberg or something. Rosen. No, that's the electric chair one. Something. I think it was something Rosenberg. She literally bombed
Susan Rosenberg.
It could be that, but she was part of the Weather Underground too in the 1960s. And they bombed the Capitol building. Like they put a bomb in the U.S. Capitol and blow it up. And so when the people act like January 6th, like the worst thing ever, it's like, no, just look, you know. And Bill Clinton pardoned her in the 90s, but she was on the board of BLM and helping get all this money from, like, Bank of America. What, they pledged like $100 million or maybe it was even more than that. All these companies were just throwing money at it. The woman who was in charge of BLM ended up buying like that multi-million dollar mansion in Malibu, and
yeah, hence the joke, buy large mansions.
Yeah. But they had a lot of, that's the thing, I think reason why I think BLM kind of happened was that was kind of Obama's administration put a lot of these people in positions of power with lots of money. Yeah, because you got to think of it this way. One of the ways Obama's administration got money for organizations like BLM or organizations that would later become like BLM is his DOJ, when they would, like, let's say, like HSBC, for example, got fined because they got caught money laundering or something like that. I forget what it was, but they got fined like millions and millions and millions of dollars. Well, the DOJ doesn't just put that money in a bank account and just, you know, as like, you know, for pizza Fridays or whatever, right? Like they dole it out to quote unquote nonprofits. And so it was really this, speaking of money laundering, it was like a money laundering machine. The DOJ would fine a bank or some corporation because of some civil rights violation or whatever this fine was, it could be millions and millions of dollars. And then what they would do is they would disperse it to, not BLM because they didn't exist yet, but groups like BLM. They would disperse it to these groups and give them a war chest so that they could later become BLM. So that's something that the right never does and should. But the left, I mean, under Obama, a lot of stuff like that was happening big time, where they were just using their position in Washington D.C. to fund their tentacles in the private sector, or, you know, in the nonprofit world.
Isn't it amazing? Because as I say, he started off, everyone, like the message was that he was the post-racial president, and it sounds like basically immediately it was funneling money and resources into black activist organizations.
Well, yeah, because they had, who's that guy? Glenn Beck got kind of famous for taking out, there was this black communist that I think now works for MSNBC even. But no, if you look at his administration, it was very black, you know, and it was as black almost as it might have even been the blackest administration. I don't know if it was or not, but it seems like it was. But a lot of the key positions were black people, you know, whether you're talking about Susan Rice or you're talking about the DOJ guy with the mustache, or the lady that. Again, these are names I haven't had to say in a while, so I'm like forgetting who they are. Like, I can picture
Van Jones, is that right?
Yeah, Van Jones. So Glenn Beck actually politically assassinated Van Jones and got him out of the administration because he was a literal communist, like he was a, you know, card carrying communist. And so yeah, that's how a lot of these people in the Obama administration were. But yeah, you had Loretta Lynch was the black head of the DOJ, and before her it was forget his name, but yeah, it was all the key positions were non-whites, and they funneled a lot of money to non-white organizations, and that's why I think it seemed as if they had sprung out of nowhere. Why all of a sudden they had all this money to spend on these protests and everything else? Because really, that was money given to them by the DOJ and by the federal government. In one way or another, they found ways to get that money out of the coffers of the federal government into the hands of leftist organizations.
And again, to come back to that libertarian guy from earlier, I mean,
right.
his whole way of thinking is completely blind to this kind of thing. It's all going on around him, and he's just fucking dazed with principles.
Right. Yeah. He'd be outraged at the idea of the right trying to counter this sort of thing by mimicking it. Right. He would rather be the principled loser and donate them, or, you know, maybe put the money towards the national debt or some useless thing like that. When imagine if just if all the, you know, if every dissident right wing creator and you know, news outlet or activist or whatever, I mean, there's not a lot of us, honestly, and it wouldn't take a lot of money to fully fund even just a handful of us, right? And that's all it would take, is just like a few million bucks, and the right's not willing to do that, because the people who the right elects aren't actually on the right.
Well, yeah, that's a whole thing. I'm just seeing if I can load Odyssey on my phone, because someone said earlier that does still work, because there might well be super chats posted, and it's fucked tonight, and I'm really sorry to anyone. I mean, it is available, that this stream is going out on Rumble and Twitter and Telegram, so if you do have any problem, I should have said that at the start. But I'm going to have, I don't know, it's a real problem. Odyssey is quite glitchy.
I brought up the Odyssey ones if you want me to go through. And I what's the last one you were able to read?
I can't remember. It was the last one that I read out to you.
Okay, let me see here. So we got, what was Devin's thoughts on blah, blah, blah. Excuse me. We've got that one we covered. Trump is a disaster. We got that one. We got that one. Christmas especially. Okay, here we go, I think. I think you did that one. Wait, okay. Mr. Choley says, Merry Christmas, Woes and Devin. Hail from the great state of Tennessee in Old South. I never miss a millennial, especially your interviews with Devin and Morgoth. Too bad AA couldn't make it this year. Okay, that's the one you just did, right? Land of the Fake says, Super Chatters control the media. Yeah, we did that one. ExposeFlyers.com says, Awake all white people now. Volga German is the last one, and it says, Devin is the most based black podcaster. Yes, I am black, and Alex Jones thinks my name is Dave Owen Stack.
Well, I've managed to get the stream on my phone, but I can't get the live chat. Here we go. But it's going to take a while. So I am sorry. This is the first time this has happened. That's why I wasn't able to prepare for this happening. So I do apologize.
No, no problem.
Yeah. It's just one of those things. I mean, it started happening last night. So this is why it's just as well that I am going out on multiple platforms so that there are options for people. But anyway, there's live chats appearing there. So it's obviously still working for some people. It's just, I don't know. Sometimes I do wonder if the feds are trying to fuck up my my internet connection, because hold on a second.
Yeah, they could. I could see that.
Like Chrome just stopped working a few months ago. I'm being facetious. I don't genuinely think this is happening, but at the same time, it would explain a few things. Chrome just stopped working, and so now I've got to use Edge.
I actually heard you talking about this it was one of the ones I was listening to when I was doing stuff around the house. You said that Brave wasn't working for you with stuff. I'm actually using Brave right now and it works fine.
All right. No, I've never used Brave. What I said probably was that someone tried to use it 2 years ago on Millennial and it didn't work with StreamYard.
Yeah. I'm using it right now. That's what I work. I almost exclusively use Brave. Because it's like all the good bits of Chrome without all the Google tentacles in it. So, because it's essentially Chrome, like it's that's basically what the code is. It's just that because I think Chrome's open source, so they just get that and then alter it a little bit, and make it less gay, and then recompile it. So that's what I'd recommend using is Brave.
Well, I'll download that after this stream is over. Judy is trying to cause trouble and controversy there, I think. And I think all of the other super chats have been read out. Expose Flyers says, "Awake all white people now." Yes, of course. That's what we're desperately trying to do. Okay. Well, let's end it there. I am really sorry about Odyssey, but there's nothing I can do about it, unfortunately. Okay, this has been 3 hours. It's always quite a long one with you. I'm never quite sure what your expectations are, but usually millennial streams tend to be about an hour and a half. But obviously, you have the gift of the gab. And
that's a nice way of putting it.
Very enjoyable. no, but it is very gratefully received. All right, so let's end it there. I will be back tomorrow night. Actually, there was one question that somebody asked me to ask you, and this was a few months ago. Someone asked, I can't actually remember who it was now, but they asked me to put this question to you. Have you ever seen A Time to Kill?
That sounds familiar.
It's a John Grisham novel that was adapted into a film, and he based the story on a real life murder. Frody and American Krogan did a really good stream about this about 2 years ago now. Really good stuff. So Grisham based his novel on a real life crime. I can't remember what it was exactly. I think it was two sisters and two black guys broke into their house. I think they raped one and killed her and then raped the other one. But she managed to survive. Think that they might have killed the parents. I can't remember exactly what it was now. But the point of it all is that Grisham changed it to two white guys. And I'm fairly sure he also changed it to two black girls. Something like that. And then the film adaptation, which I think was about 94, 93, carried that over. So it was just an inversion of reality. And of course, people at the time didn't know the reality, what had actually happened. So they just took it as it was part of that stream of anti-white stuff going on in the 90s.
Yeah.
And it's amazing, again, how open and brazen this is. But this is what happens when you dominate the media. You can... people believe the thing that they hear 10 times over the thing that they hear once or not at all. So, yeah, so you haven't seen it, but I'll try to find that, the link to the Frody stream about it.
I just took a look at the IMDb and I vaguely remember the movie existing, but I don't think I've seen it.
All right. Okay. See, now Odyssey is suddenly working again for me. For fuck's sake. All right. Okay, let's leave it at that. So I'll be back tomorrow night with Steve Laws, and then I think a lot of people are looking forward to that, and then Ryan Roger Athey, and then John Carter, who has a Substack called Postcards from Barsoom, and then Fortisax. And then I'll be doing the Midway AMA after all of that. So it'll be 5 streams tomorrow. So there we go. In the meantime, Devin, any last words? Any before we end?
Not really.
Okay, then. Then I'll just say thank you for appearing on Millennial X.
Well, thanks for having me.
All right. Thank you. And I'll see you all tomorrow at, the usual time. Bye-bye for now.
We hope you're enjoying Millennial, but how about giving something back to your tireless host? Commemorating 10 years of Millennial, this unique animated vector graphic is available as an NFT for one lucky owner, and only one. The auction closes on the 30th. Make your bid today.